celebrity chef Rick Bayless, Chicago poet and commentator Mario Smith, and frying pan regular inventor Steve Gadlin. Now here is your host, a man who already killed his Mother's Day present for his mom, Justin Kaufman.
No, I didn't kill it like, wow, awesome, I killed it. No, I killed it. I bought a plant and it died. Who knew sun killed a plant? I'm super upset about this. I didn't lose the music. I thought I was doing... I was so ahead of the curve, Pete. I thought I was, you know, usually I'll be honest with you. In past jobs, I've worked 9 to 5s. Mother's Day was always kind of a secondary thought. But since this job is at night, it's given me time during the day to do errands and to think about and to reflect. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get ahead on Mother's Day. I'm going to get a hydrangea, right? I went up to Gethsemane up on Clark Street.
Yeah.
Got it. I even faked like I cared. Like, I know it sounds terrible, but when you talk to somebody, I'm like, so what's the, how many of these, what are we talking about to bloom? She's just looking at me as I'm trying to act like I know what I'm talking about. And so I get it. It's a beautiful plant, right?
Yeah.
Take it home. And then I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm not going to put it in my yard because Mother's Day is on Sunday. So yeah. What am I going to do? So I put it on my back, like, deck, right?
Yeah.
On a table.
Seems like a good place.
11:30 maybe. Right? 2 o'clock, I come back to check on it. It is wilted and dead. Like a mystery whodunit.
Murder.
Like a murder. Somebody murdered my hydrangea. So I realized when looking it up and talking to people that it's not a good idea to put it in direct sunlight.
Yeah, who would think? Normally you get a plant, you want to get it towards the light.
It's so ridiculous. Who do these plants think they are?
We should probably get a master gardener on the phone.
We do. I got an email today from a master gardener. She was making a point of order from the master gardener experience from last week mm-hmm. in Gadlin's frying pan. But we'll talk about that later. A master gardener would be good. But how do I know? You know what I mean? Put it on the label. There's a label with a picture on it.
Like, yeah, when you get a prescription, you right. get all the right. information that you need. They should have that on the plant.
Don't drink grapefruit juice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to do that. I'm scared. Okay. You know? Don't drink alcohol. Don't operate a forklift while on this medication. Oh, okay. Don't put plant in direct sunlight. I know I sound like if you're into gardening right now, you're listening going, oh, this guy's... He's really ignorant, doesn't understand. But come on! As the commoners among us, plant goes in sun.
Yeah, that's what I would... And water it like a son of a gun.
I just figured it was already watered. And that one might have been a problem, too, that I think I just got a dry plant. You know what I mean?
Like a lemon?
I just figured... Yeah, exactly. Like, I figured that it already had been watered a lot. Like, at the place.
Like, yeah, Gethsemane, they put all the bad ones up top.
Yeah.
You have to dig for the have to dig for the good ones.
Like, maybe they're like, good, we finally can get rid of this one. Oh, this one's just sitting on the lot.
The expiration
but
date.
But I just figured that, like, if you're buying from a garden place.
Yeah, and that place is great.
Yeah. If you're buying from a garden place, and I love that place. I get all my Christmas trees, everything from there. I love that place. That... They would, like, there'd just be, like, it'd be so watered that it could go, like, 14 days without water and still be okay.
So they're pretty nice up there. Do they, when you check out, do they offer you, like, hey, do you need any suggestions about how to treat this plant?
I might have taken the wrong tact by acting like I knew everything about it. And it's so weird, Pete, so weird. I don't know why I did this, but I did it in a way that I was like... I didn't want to be so cliche that I was buying a hydrangea for a Mother's Day present, right? Like, why would you be there on a Friday before the Sunday of Mother's Day specials? Everywhere?
Yeah,
I kind of wanted to be like street, like I was a gardener.
Yeah, I get the.
You know what I mean?
I'm like, familiar with the feeling.
So I bring it up there, and I'm like, I actually lied to her. She's like, $20 or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to look great. I can't wait to plant this. Like, I as the words were coming out of my mouth, I was like, what are you talking about? You're not going to touch this. Oh, this is great. I've been looking for one of these for a long time. This is going to look great. Yeah.
You get to give my hands dirty.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be great. It's just the beginning of a huge project I'm going to work on. Anyway, I'm so glad I'm here because I'm a professional. Thanks. So it could have been my tact. It could have been that I was a little too. It's like when you go to any. I always do this all the time. I do this when I feel like I'm intimidated. And gardening is intimidating. Plants are intimidating to me. And I'm intimidated. I go into more of like. I double down on my Chicago. I roll up the sleeves like, I know what's going on here. Don't try to scam me. You give me five of those. I want five blooms, not three, five. I have. It's a nasty habit that I do when I get intimidated. I start to, like, I feel like if I bulldoze through it, like, I won't be embarrassed. I did that on my whole honeymoon in Rome. Like, that Rome was one big bulldoze. I'm like, I'm gonna learn nothing for this trip, and I'm gonna go in and show them. And by day two, I had like over tipped, under tipped, lost luggage. Like I was out of control, and I was stubborn about it. It's a great story about me thinking I could take on Rome because I'm Justin. Watch this, big deal. Watch this, and I quickly realized that I should probably be more Rick Steves and less like Steven Seagal. You know?
Do we know how the plant? So do we bury it? I don't know.
I gotta go check on it. 815 said I'm a master gardener. Thank you. And the problem is that the hydro for hydrangea means water. They love water and shade. I gave them no water and sun. But now it's like I gotta go back. The thing that kills me is I'm like I did put in a shade and I did water it, so it's probably gonna be okay. But what's gonna kill me is I know for a fact I'm going to get there. It's not going to be fixed. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to be like, have to go back and buy another $20 hydrangea.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? And I'm going to go up there, Pete, and I'm going to be like, hey, you know what? I thought the first one looked so good. I'm going to get a second one. You know what? Give me three of these because you should see it. It's like the Garden of Eden out here in my foyer. Anyway, this is the download. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, let's do the carryout. You want to do the carryout? This is the carryout. We start our show every night where I read the newspaper. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Governor Bruce Rauner joins Senator Mark Kirk and other Illinois Republicans in skipping the GOP convention in Cleveland this summer. So let me get this straight. They don't endorse Trump. They're skipping their party's convention, which is a rally for Trump, but they support Donald Trump. That sounds like a blueprint for president. President Hillary Clinton, am I right? High five. Okay. President Obama said that being president is not, quote, a reality show. This, of course, is a shot across the bow at Jeff Probst, who's vying for the GOP nomination. No, of course, it's about Donald Trump. I personally disagree with the president on this one. How great would it be if every issue in our country was decided in Donald's boardroom, with his kids flanked to his side? Economy goes sour? Chairman Gilbert Gottfried, you're fired. That's perfect. A four-car pileup stymied morning rush hour traffic today on the Kennedy. One person was killed in the accident. That's really the worst-case scenario. Not only did you get seriously mad at the traffic this morning, but now you have to dial it back because somebody died. It's like you have to apologize to yourself for your own frustration. That's really the worst. Scientists were able to grow a human embryo outside a womb for 13 days. There are ethical questions for sure, but man, 13 days? That's impressive. The last time I tried to grow a mustache, it took me like a month. Kudos. Jamba Juice announced they're moving their headquarters from California to Texas. When asked for comment, Texas Senator Ted Cruz said, "While I couldn't bring the presidency to Texas, I got the second best thing, a razzmatazz." Did a whole joke so I could do a Ted Cruz saying, razzmatazz. Apple is being accused of deleting your music library. Once you upload your music to the cloud, are your MP3s being deleted from your iPod, your phone, and everywhere else it's stored? I'm not really sure how it works, but I'm probably okay with deleting the Carly Rae Jepsen Call Me Maybe purchase I made like 6 years ago.
If I knew that using Shuffle would always bring that song up for eternity, I would have never, ever bought it. I mean, seriously, every time. Oh, next song. Call me maybe. Hit my number. Oh, they're thinking delete, delete, delete. I can't figure out how to delete. Now it's time for the download's new emoji report. New emojis include smiley face with side eye, a red eggplant, a North Korean flag, and a kitty cat with tears in both of his eyes. That's been the download's new emoji report. In weather, oh God, it's so hot. It's too hot. God, I miss gray April. In sports, the Cubs just keep on rolling. And man, was it crowded today at Wrigley Field. I predict lots of peeing in condo foyers tonight. The Cubs won 8-6 to take game two of a four-game set with the Nationals. How good has Ben Zobrist been? Another huge game, two home runs. The Sox start a three-game set tonight against the Twins. They lost 2 of 3 to the Red Sox, but I expect a series win this weekend. Also, ESPN is saying that the Sox could be a landing spot for Tim Lincecum. Lincecum, he's got great hair. Really nice. Really, like he uses conditioner great hair. You know what I mean? Love to have him on the South Side. Bring some style, some pizzazz, some razzmatazz. Also, the MLB has moved the Marlins-Pirates series from Puerto Rico due to the Zika virus. I've been saying it. End of days. It's here. World War Z was a documentary, bro. The Bears signed their first draft pick, fourth-round corner DeAndre Hall. Let me try him out. DeAndre Hall with a big play! Or, DeAndre Hall cannot make that mistake! Yeah, I think it sticks. And finally, Rob Kardashian and Blac Chyna are having a baby. It was announced today. Sorry, that's all I have. And I'm not sure why I care at all. But they're having a baby! That's the carryout for May 6, 2016. Hey, we got a special on guacamole today. No, it's fresh. Trust me, it's fresh. We definitely made it today for Seis de Mayo. Coming up, Super Chef Rick Bayless on Lena Brava, his new restaurant in the West Loop. We'll talk with him about Baja cuisine. That's what he's cooking up there. Wood only. No gas, no electricity, just wood. Also, we'll do Mother's Day. We'll do sports. We'll do the frying pan. It's Friday night. It's the download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, let's get to the news. How you doing, Rob Martyr?
I'm doing well, my friend, and you?
Good. Yes, I'm excited about the weekend. I got a huge weekend of Mother's Day plans. Although I got to get a new I got to get a new present.
Uh-oh.
For blowing that hydrangea.
Yeah, plants and me don't go well together.
I just feel like, you know, we've seen over time scientific advances in which you can dummy proof a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Plants should be genetically modified for guys like me who just know sun, put in the sun, right?
Right.
There should not be a plant that's like, no, it doesn't like it, like shade. No, remove a gene. Splice that DNA. They're all in the sun.
Yeah.
That's my scientific. If anyone wants to do research on that, they should.
My problem is that when a plant starts to wilt for me, I just jam those little sticks in the soil, thinking that'll help.
Right. That's a good idea. I'm going to try that. That's actually great advice.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, yesterday night, a new restaurant and brewery opened on Randolph Street in the West Loop. It's the latest projects from Chef Rick Bayless. Lena Brava and Cruz Blanca will focus on Baja cooking, seafood, mezcal, and, of course, beer. Bayless, of course, is the man behind Frontera Grill, Topola Bampo, and Joco, not to mention his cookbooks, his television programs, his podcasts, his empire. What do the new projects bring to the Chicago food landscape? Rick Bayless joins me now. Rick, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm tired just listening to you talk about what I do.
That was a truncated version of what you do. So last night you opened. How was the opening?
You know, it was great. I was really nervous when we started because you never know what kind of craziness can transpire. But the truth was that we had gone through so many practice evenings beforehand that last night was like a cakewalk. I was super happy.
You've opened up a lot of different places and worked on a lot of projects in Chicago, but it's been a while. What's that feeling for you when you're on the eve or the day or the night of opening a new place?
Scared, I think, is probably the word to describe it. I think anytime that you're trying to really do something new and something that's outside your comfort zone, because, you know, Lena Brava has a kitchen that is entirely wood-fired. So if you want to bring a pot of water to a boil, you have to light a fire first. And that's a lot to work with. It's really complex, and you have to know a lot about live fire cooking. And we have to our entire team has to cook. Even the pastry chefs have to bake everything in a wood-burning oven.
Wow. That seems to be a lot of the themes of what you're working with here. I mean, fire and, of course, ice. There seems to be a natural theme running through the restaurants.
It is. It's very much like the cuisine of Northern Baja California, which is our inspiration for this place. You go to the there's a lot of chefs that have settled there in the last 10 or 15 years, and they've all opened these places that have their wood-fired kitchens. Maybe they also have some gas or maybe an electric fryer or something. We chose to go full bore and not do any of that. But the cuisine there is very simple, rustic. It almost has a Mediterranean flair to it. And the people that have settled in that part of Mexico have come from Asia. They've come from Europe. They've certainly migrated there from different parts of Mexico. So it's one of the most interesting cuisines in the whole country. And yet hardly anybody knows about it in the United States. So we feel really lucky to be able to share this rustic, earthy, fabulous cuisine with everybody. And, you know, it's really focused on fish because the place in Mexico that's most well known for the fisheries is Ensenada, which is in Northern Baja. So it's a great place to visit. It's a great place to use as an inspiration.
You've done a lot with, obviously, with Mexican cooking. You know, that's your specialty. But your specialty seems to be more of central Mexico or inner Mexico. How hard is it for you to make that transition to, you know, to sort of conquering Baja food?
I don't know. You'll have to be the judge on that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how well we do with all of this.
Are there similarities?
You know, yeah, there are. But, you know, the things that we're known for so much in Frontera, say, the moles and the complex sauces and all that, that's not a big part of this cuisine. It's much lighter, and it more focuses on salsas. Of course, we've got our handmade tortillas that we're doing here as well. But it's a very... it's a simple, rustic, delicious, lighter style cuisine than maybe people might expect.
On the other side, you have Cruz Blanca, which is the brewery. What drew you to doing beer? I mean, for you, it's always been food. I mean, obviously wine as well and service, but right. What drew you to getting into the beer world?
Well, it's kind of a funny story that I have a partner in Frontera Foods who just became this beer fanatic, and he started traveling all over the world tasting beers and bringing these stuff back to taste. And then he went to brewing school because he really got into it and wanted to know more about it. And so this was sort of a dream that he had. And then we joined forces with the last of the master brewers from Goose Island. Mm-hmm. And he's really brought a lot of technical skill as well as incredible creativity to this project. So it all just sort of grew up naturally from people following their passions and getting everybody else excited about it. I was super into the idea of doing a wood-fired kitchen. My partner was really into the idea of doing a microbrewery. And then we sort of melded the two things together because we have this little tiny taqueria at the back of the tasting room for the brewery that does the Oaxacan-style taqueria, which is, again, more rustic than what you would expect if you've been to Chicago taqueria.
Wow. Another part of it is the mezcal, the tequila. You're bringing that. You're bringing that full force to Chicago.
Well, this is the thing. Right now, we have 111 different expressions of mezcal in this bar. I'm standing right in the middle of the dining room, looking at them. So I know that this is what we've got. And that used to, we all talked about 100% agave tequilas and how fabulous that was. Well, mezcal is even more interesting and complex and offers more variety of flavors. You know that tequila has to, by law, be made with one variety of agave, but you can use up to 14 different varieties of agave to make mezcal. Mezcal is like the father of tequila, and so it expresses more of the place that the agaves are grown, the different style of agave. But the one thing that ties all mezcals together is that they have to be made in this really old-fashioned artisan style, and that really reflects the same thing that we're doing in the kitchen with all the wood fire.
You know, this restaurant and the brewery are on Randolph Street. There, you took an old building, you rehabbed it. We've sort of been seeing it over the last couple months transform. What's it feel like to be on Randolph Street, where all these hot spots have become? Because you know, you've made your name as the king of Clark Street, where you know, Frontera and Topolobampo transformed downtown and River North when you started there. What does it feel like to move over to the West Loop, where all the youngsters, the hot spots are at? Huh?
Well, it's kind of weird because, you know, when we 30 years ago, when we started working on Frontera, because we opened almost 30 years ago, and that stretch of Clark Street was really, really a shady neighborhood. But it was the only thing that we could afford. And then over the years, we helped to bring a lot of interest and other businesses, obviously, to that area. And now it's like, you know, it's incredible. It's completely surrounded by clubs and great restaurants and all that. But I have to say that it's really fun. And so far, it's been really fun to be on Randolph Street because we are always exploring new stuff, and all of these restaurants and chefs that are around us here on Randolph Street are doing exactly the same thing. So we're really happy, actually, to be here. It seemed like the right next move for us.
Rick, I've known you for a while, and I know you to be a busy guy, and you are, you know, you obviously have a lot of things going on. Adding another restaurant and the brewery on top of the restaurants that you already have, plus the shows, the podcast, the television, the books, how do you keep it all going? Are you worried about overexposure?
Well, for us, it's all about teams. And we only do the next step. We only grow when we have team members that really want to take on the projects. And that's been the success story for us, is to always make sure that the team was there before we actually committed to the project. And we have an amazing team here on Randolph Street. You know, my daughter, after having lived in New York for the last 7.5 years, has moved back one of the management team to open Lenya. So in some ways, it's sort of a legacy project in the sense that we're kind of passing the baton to our next generation of our family.
Wow. The cuisines that you bring, I mean, even the moles and you were talking about earlier, those were new experiences for Chicago diners. And what you're going to do with Lena Brava and Cruz Blanco, they're different experiences when you talk about the Oaxacan taqueria in the back. How has the Chicago audiences or diners responded to you bring sort of expanding the palate?
It's only about how good a cooks we are, honestly. If we put our heads down, concentrate, bring every bit of our talent and commitment to what we're doing in the kitchen, then we're going to make good food. And it's the good food that captures everybody's imagination. And that's the only thing that we have ever really tried to do. Once we've seduced them, as we say, with really great flavor, we have the opportunity to tell them the stories that are behind those dishes. And that's all we've really wanted to do all these years. And it's been successful for us. But food is number one. It's the flavor on the plate. I find chefs all the time wanting to tell stories that they don't back up with the food. And then they say, oh, my diners weren't ready. And usually I just want to say, no, I don't think you paid enough attention to the food itself. So that's really what we're all about, is just the food here. What we're doing right now is just super delicious food. And if you want to come, we can teach you all kinds of stories about it and background. But all we really care about is that you have a great time with delicious food.
And last question. I mean, you've done some stuff outside of Chicago, but the majority of your projects have been in this town. What keeps you here? Because you have a national profile. You don't have to open restaurants just on Randolph Street. You can open them up in Los Angeles, New York, which you've done. What keeps you building and setting up new businesses here in Chicago?
It's just that I love Chicago and I don't like having to commute far distance. distances for anything. So I'm really happy to be in Chicago. It is the absolute perfect place for me, for my own personality. I love it here. Every time I love the excitement of New York. I love to go to San Francisco, where they have all this abundant produce around them 12 months of the year. But when I come back to Chicago, I always feel like I've come home. This is the right place for me.
Rick Bayless's new place, Lena Brava and Cruz Blanco, are on Randolph Street. They just opened last night. Chef Bayless, thanks so much for taking some time out today.
Are you kidding? It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Justin.
Take care.
Who does that?
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 All right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, summer is just about here. Judging Michigan Avenue, it has arrived. They're about six across on the sidewalks here on Michigan Avenue. It's pretty crazy. Summer in the city wouldn't be the same without water cascading from Chicago's iconic Buckingham Fountain. In her latest Who Does That segment, WGN Radio's Kim Gordon introduces us to the man behind the fountain.
He's not one to spout off about his job, but for the past 10 years, Chicago Park District Chief Engineer Dan Duss quietly makes sure Buckingham Fountain runs like clockwork. He says the process begins in February.
Our landscape crew comes out and sweeps out all the debris and anything that is gathered over the winter time. And then there's one day that's basically assembly day where all of our trades come out.
This week, Dust has been testing the waters, making sure the fountain is ready for its summer debut.
Pump number one runs all day long. Pump number two and number three only run for the major display every hour on the hour.
And with the tests complete, it was my turn to start the fountain with a simple click of the mouse.
All I have to do is click yes and it'll go.
Mm-hmm.
The original 1926 pumps and motors turn on and water flows within minutes. And it's a lot of water.
At full display, you were putting out almost 15,000 gallons per minute. Minor display, it's about 8,000 or 9,000 GPM. The fountain itself holds 1.5 million gallons.
Dust gets a little misty when talking about his job.
It is a treasure, so we're guarding the treasure here.
The fountain opens this Saturday. It runs every day from 8 to 11 through mid-October. I'm Kim Gordon, and now you know. Who does that?
To see video from inside the pump house at Buckingham Fountain, go to our website, WGNradio.com. Yeah. Churches. Yeah, see, I got a good memory, Pete. We had churches on when they came through for Pitchfork last year.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's coming up here, isn't it? We got to start thinking about all the bands that are going to be playing there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so thanks for joining us in this lovely night tonight. Wow. I mean, seriously, Michigan Avenue is filled to the gills. It's like a very casual play let out. I think it's just like throngs of people just walking towards the studio, and you're like, wow, something just happened here.
It gives you a boost of energy, though, when you
really
see this many people out.
It's like if you're in Florida or California or whatever in a tourist destination, and then the sun sets, and everyone's down by the beach, and like, oh, and then there's like a droves of people walking back towards the center of town. It feels like that's what's happened here. There's a million people walking up and down.
Where are they going? Ask somebody.
Where are you going? That's a great question. I don't know where. I think I've seen these people four or five times. I feel like maybe this is the Truman Show, and I'll bet you the Department of Tourism has just hired all these extras. They just keep going back and forth. I'm like, I've seen you before. I love that we're the Times Square kind of media for this experience for them. They're like, oh.
Like the Today Show.
Yeah, people walk up and they listen. They're like, oh, Rick Bayless, this is Chicago. So much going on. tonight is a big night. I didn't know this. Facebook told me this. Tonight's a big night for proms.
Yeah.
I'm not. That doesn't mean I'm friends with a bunch of 17-year-old girls. I'm friends with their parents.
I follow my high school on Twitter, and I saw that they tweeted their prom is tonight at the Hyatt.
Yeah. There you
go. Good night for it.
Yeah, right.
Normally, you can
get a beautiful night. Yeah. Oh, man.
great. So when I get out of here at 12:30, I'm going to see a whole bunch of drunken teenagers hanging from the sunroof of a limo. Woo! Yes, bro! Hey, woo! That's exactly what I need. Wonderful.
I heard they're coming. I heard they're coming over to your house.
Yeah.
You're going to be the chaperone tonight. You're going to be all night.
Yeah, I'll be the chaperone, all right.
Yeah, I think it could be coming up soon for you, isn't it?
For me?
Yeah, for like proms.
Well, the twins are 16, but it's a little different in Montreal. It's not quite as big as it is here. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not trying to, you know, keep up with the neighbors, yeah, right, you know, it's pretty low key.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Just learned a little bit about a Canadian prom.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah, I wonder, you know, I remember my prom. I had such a strange prom where I didn't go to my prom. I went to the neighboring high school's prom because the girl I was dating at the time went to that school. And then afterwards, we went back to her house, and her parents, like, chaperoned a night, an all-night, almost like a dance-a-thon at her house. Like, but there was no booze because you were 17 or whatever. And that kind of took away any sort of necking. No necking that could happen. And I remember the draw. This is what was really strange. The draw was pancakes at, like, 2 in the morning. That was the draw.
That's a draw.
And they're like, "Oh, it's gonna be Dad's making pancakes." And I'm like, "I don't understand what's happening. I'm from the neighboring town. I was a bad boy." And then the next day, there was like a festivities all day, so it was like tennis and go to this park and that park. And by the end of the second day of prom, I was like, "We got to break up. This is just too much." And I think I still owe her. I'm so sorry. I think I still owe her like $40 for the pictures.
Aww.
Like, I think that was it. It was already like we were getting, and I feel bad, but it was like almost to the end of the relationship.
You just want to hang on for the one last social event of the season.
And I remember, this is a crazy story, that I was living out in McHenry County, and there was some sort of opportunity for a high school kid to do a shift at a radio station in Harvard, right? So right next to the cow, there's like an AM station there that's regional there. And I don't know how it came about. I was interested in broadcast. And they're like, on this Saturday, you can come out and do the 12 to 4, right, or something like that. And it was mostly like reading news. And
still
it was great.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity, right?
Yeah.
I was about to finish high school. But prom starts pretty early, you know, like you got to start getting ready and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember we were on a double date with a buddy of mine, and that's how it was going to go down. And they you know, when you live out in McHenry County, everything is 25 minutes from each other. You know, like, oh, yeah, come pick me up. But you're in McHenry, I'm in Woodstock. Like, it was like,
yeah.
Oh, man. You know,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. So I missed the ride / bus, whatever it was, to go to prom.
Oh.
Like, I missed.
Did it show up late?
I showed up late. And so my date and I and the double, we had to ride in the back of the principal's van. Like, and it wasn't
man,
like,
you're so cool.
It's so cool. So I felt so bad for her because she was like, you know, this is her prom and she's late and now she has to go with the principal because of me, the guy from the other town.
Yeah.
And I remember it being like not even like a really like a furnished van. I think I had to sit on the wheel hub like in the back. Like that was because that's when you did that kind of thing, you know, like, oh, yeah, just sit over there. There's no you don't need a seatbelt, man. You're all good. So, yeah, that was not I don't think I took that tradition very seriously.
Yeah, I didn't go. I didn't. I went to when I was a freshman. I went to one dance, and I went with another dude. Like we just went by ourselves because we thought we should go. And it was the worst thing that I've ever witnessed in my life. And never went to another high school
dance. So then you're out. You're out of dances.
Yeah.
Huh. Did you have significant others
in your high
school years?
Not really.
So they weren't let down by your, I don't go to dances, babe. I'm just going to listen to Depeche Mode in the basement with my black light. You go to your stupid dance. No. Yeah, I did the, I'll never forget the first song, like when the dinner's over.
Yeah.
This image, I mean, it's been years now. We're talking 20, you know, plus years, 25 years, whatever it is. And I don't remember anything else from the night except for, you know, pancakes and breaking up, that kind of thing. But there's one thing where I remember, like, when it was done, like, ladies and gentlemen, like, a mic goes on and it's the prom DJ and he's like, He was like, "Are you ready to dance?" And like the Under the Sea or whatever it was. I think it was Finally Found a Love of a Lifetime, like by Firehose or Firehouse. Firehose, a different man. And I remember they're like, "This is how it was." And it was like, "Are you ready to dance?" And the lights go on in this stupid hall, and it goes, "Are you ready to rock? Let's get rocked." Let's Get Rocked by Def Leppard. And it was like mass people just
running
in there, like the beginning of Grease, you know, to Def Leppard, Let's Get Rocked. And I was a little alt kid, so I was like, what is this? I'm going to do Def Leppard, Let's Get. It wasn't even a new song. Like, it was like a 2-year-old song, but this DJ was like, we start with Let's Get Rocked. That's how the prom kids started. You want to get rocked? Yeah! Anyway. So, yeah, that's happening tonight, prom.
I never felt the pressure to go to prom, and maybe it's just I was oblivious to what was around me, and that's probably the case. But I know, like, I didn't feel pressure. I wasn't admonished for not going, but I think it's changed now. I think it's a big deal. People spend a lot of money on it.
It's all the prom, what do you call it? The prom invitation, or like the proposals. Right now you have to do a prom proposal. You can't just go up to somebody at the locker and be like, what are you doing? You want to go to prom? You have to like do rose petals, right? You have to do rose petals, and then you have to hire a band. And then there's got to be a video and a dance involved.
It's an extravaganza.
You have to have like a known actor in your proposal. Like you have to get one of the guys from Modern Family. I'm serious. That's how it has to be now. You spend like $1,200.
What kind of dude would want to go through all that trouble?
No dude. It's not for the dudes. You really didn't do this in high school, did you?
Well, I mean, the dude has to do it, though.
He has to do it. Yeah.
Is it just because he wants to... Do some necking later?
I think that's the. And I hate to say this for all their parents who are listening tonight as their kids go off to prom, but that might be the end game.
Mm-hmm.
If I put like $9,000 into this, may get some necking. Do you want to get rocked? Yeah. We got a great show tonight, although it's already feels like it's halfway over. We haven't even said what's on it. Poet and commentator and download regular Mario Smith will cross the bridge. He hates bridges. And he's going to join us tonight. We'll take a look at the week in review, get his take on the Lucas Museum, Trump, and the Taco Bowl. And, of course, the Cubs Sox. Always fun when Mario comes in. Speaking of the Cubs Sox, a rare home doubleheader today. WGN Radio's Sam Panionovich was at Wrigley for not only the Cubs win, but the official beginning of the Wrigley Field fan frenzy. So many fans. I mean, I joked earlier, it looked like there were like two for each seat. And you juxtapose that. That's what Bubala was talking about last night. You juxtapose, and it is crowded tonight at the Cell, but still there's a lot of open seats. But man, today, a day game, a beautiful day at Wrigley Field, it just was a little bit out of control.
Good teams playing each other.
Yeah, right. Early playoff, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good game going on at the Cell. The Sox are winning 5-3 right now in the fourth.
Are they any good?
No, they're terrible. They started 0-10 or something like that. And they were the last team to win. And so they've been trying to play catch-up. But, they were pretty close to a playoff team last year. If they weren't a playoff, did they? No. They had a bunch of a run, so they're not. I wouldn't count them out. I just think they do what the Sox usually do:
start off horribly, and then start to catch up.
Yeah, now they're going to play catch up. But I think the Sox have their number. The problem with the White Sox, and we'll talk with Sam Panionovich about this after 8:30, is pitching. They have three great pitchers, and then it levels off. Latos is on the mound now, and that's a question mark because he started really strong, but he's been faltering.
They get to the playoffs, though. All you need is three.
Yeah, but they're gonna have to figure out that fifth starter because they don't have one at this point. So,
Tim Lincecum.
Yeah, right. Beautiful long hair. All that plus the movie guys have. I think they've kind of seen Captain America: Civil War. My only question is, when does Marvel combine the Avengers with Guardians of the Galaxy? Right? There's the same. Any Groot cameos in this? This movie? or the little raccoon? Does he show up at all? Like, just like a passing reference, like, hey, which way to this star system? That way. And you're like, oh, cool, there he is. A Jurassic Park dinosaur? Anything. That's why I watch the Marvel movies now, is just for the crossover. And, of course, tonight, Friday night, it is time for the frying pan. Steve Gadlin will be with us, the inventor who won on Shark Tank, and he brings new ideas to workshop here, and we roll up our sleeves and we critique. Are you excited? I'm excited. This is going to be great. 312-981-7200. And, of course, it is Mother's Day weekend. I talked a little bit earlier in the show about how I already messed up a present because I don't know how to garden.
Yeah.
It was a really nice plant, and I'm hoping I'm hoping it'll be okay. Like, I doused. I probably drowned it.
When you say really nice, are you – because you said $20.
We'll put a picture on the live blog. I have a picture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's nice. It's nice. It was probably like $25.
And that's what you pay for –
I don't know. There were like bouquets of flowers that looked really nice, like in the actual planter, that were like $79-$80. And I would have gotten that. It's just it's too much money. And those look like they'd be fun, but I'm not sure what you do with them. I think that's like the kind of thing you just put on your step. These are plants that you plant into the ground. Like I have like a little dirt in front of my place that is very little, and that's where it would go.
So when you went out to do this, you weren't looking specifically for anything. You just wanted something that looked good. And
yeah,
this caught your eye.
I knew hydrangeas were a thing, right? And I almost leaned towards the really expensive ones, but I don't know where they would go.
Yeah.
So this was something that I thought would be actually good. So
I'm interested to see how it fares over the weekend.
Yeah, I'll send you the picture, and you can put it on the live blog of what it's supposed to look like, right? It looks nice. You got any big Mother's Day plans?
Going to brunch, as you do.
As you do.
Yeah, that's about it, really.
I'm excited. I'm excited for Mother's Day. You know, I was thinking about my mom. I heard Cochran this morning. They were all interviewing their mom, and I was like, hey, you know, that'd be fun to get her on. And then it was like she'd never do it.
No.
Maybe she would.
She comes in and visits on
occasion. She does, yeah. They live close by, and it would be great. I mean, I was thinking about great stories to share Mother's Day, and there's so many, but I was remembering that in seventh grade, my mom took just me, not my brother, not my dad, just us two of us, to Washington, D.C. to march on Iran-Contra, which I had no idea what was happening. I had no idea. I just was, like, really into government at the time. So, like, going to see the White House and the Capitol building and the Treasury
cool.
and all that's really cool. Like, I was really into it. But, you know, I didn't know that most of the trip would be going, oh, no, down with Dolly North, down with, you know, like, marching down the street. And we stayed. My mom also can have, she's, God bless her, so she's, I love her for it. But she can also, she's very spontaneous in how she plans. You know, so it's we'll figure it out when we get there, where we're staying, that kind of thing. And so we ended up, like, staying in a house in a pretty rundown part of D.C. where just a bunch of protesters were. So it was very hippie.
Yeah.
So, like, the guys were on floor 2 and the women were on floor 3 kind of thing. So I just had to sleep,
oh my God,
you know, down with a bunch of, like, people I didn't know.
Oh my God.
And the guy that was next to me, I'll never forget this, like, when he got ready for bed, I, like, slept with my clothes on, you know. Like, I had no idea what's happening. I'm 7th grade. I'm 12 years old, 13 years old. He, like, stripped down to his leopard bikini underwear. And I was like, oh, my God, do I need to call the cops? Like, I didn't know what I had to do.
What was happening?
I've seen after-school specials about this. But he didn't do anything. He just slept in his leopard bikini. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty cool to do. And I learned a ton. You know, I actually would say to my mom, that is how I actually got into rap music. Because when you got done with the actual long day of marching, there's a stage, and on the stage was I can't remember who it was, but it was like it was like a apartheid rap group, and it was like KRS-One, that kind of thing. I don't think it was KRS-One, but it's at that level, like a Yo MTV Raps kind of guy. And so they were rapping about, they were protest rap. And I just remember just sitting there and just kind of like, oh, well, this is something I've never seen before from McHenry County up in, you know. And then, like, that stuff started showing up. So I had, like, an affinity towards it when it started showing up on MTV. And I'm like, that's the band. I can't remember who it was. But that's, I think, the kind of the connection.
That's cool.
So there you go.
Were you pitched this as a protest trip? Or were you just pitched this as, let's go to D.C. and
I was pitched as touristy things. I can't remember, but I think it was touristy things. Like, hey, we're going to go for this thing, but we're also going to get to see the Treasury. For my eighth grade graduation in Wonder Lake at Harrison School, I sent a letter to Senator Paul Simon.
My God.
I did a whole thing and said, you should come and speak at our graduation. Like, I was super into it.
Wow.
Super into, like, the representative government, all that kind of thing. So, like, he sent me a letter back saying no. But he sent a letter back, and I had the letter forever. Like, I remember going to the mailbox and there being a U.S. Senate, seal. And I'm like, he's like, unfortunately, thank you for the invite. Unfortunately, because of time commitments and, scheduling conflicts, I can't make it. But thanks for your interest in government, Justin, Senator Paul Simon. I was like, yeah.
I think, 30 years later or whatever, we're still getting rejected by senators. It never ends.
They just don't do letters anymore. Now it's just a no response from their people. Oh, they didn't even bother to email that one back. Okay. All right, coming up after the news, we're gonna talk to Sam Penjanovic about the Cubs today and the White Sox, which are underway. What a great start to baseball this year. The men in blue, the Chicago Cubs win again 8-6 over the Washington Nationals, leaders of the NL East. A huge, huge win, not only for the team, but for the fans who came out in droves today to kick off what is going to be a long, awesome, hot summer at Wrigley Field. Sam Penjanovic was there. Sam, welcome to the show. When I saw it, I was like, are we talking about, like, three people to every seat in that place?
Yeah, well, I texted you and Pete at about 3:30, and I said, look, this place is jamming. And I got to the park earlier today, waited to see what type of crowd it would be. But for a team coming into today, it was 21-6, best in baseball. This place was loaded at about 12:45. It was already jammed. The game hadn't even started yet, and you got people that are walking in already buzzed. They've been drinking all day. You know how Wrigley is when it's kicking, and Pete knows the same. People get here early, they stay late. But there were 40,000 people here at 1:20 on a Friday
May.
To watch first place baseball in May, Cubs and Nationals. And the Cubs outlasted them, that's 8-6. But this felt like it was July. I sat in the bleachers today for probably three innings, and it's 80 degrees. People are spilling beer everywhere. It's gorgeous. There's barely any clouds in the sky, and the team is beating a really good team. So, this is your prototypical quintessential afternoon day at Wrigley Field. It was awesome.
It's unreal to think about. Last year was such a great run to pick up where they left off, and not only that, they're getting to the point where it's lore. This team is 22-6, and it's the hottest start in the history of baseball. This is something that no one could have predicted.
JK, that's a college basketball record. That's, North Carolina at the end of the season. That's Kentucky at the end of the season. You're 23-6 or 24-6. It's unbelievable. And, I asked Joe Madden about that. I said, what is it like to only lose six games through only 30? And he said, you know what? I try and stay out of the way because everybody is here. They're here for the right reason. They got swept to the NLCS last year against the Mets. There's unfinished business there. You've got a bunch of good players. You've got three or four really good pitchers. You've got probably one of the better bullpens in the league. You've got the best manager in the league. There's a lot going here on the north side. And, Madden says, I'm going to stay out of the way because everybody's been groomed here to embrace the big moment. And, Tommy La Stella today, again, an RBI. Ben Zobrist today. Two home runs. Anthony Rizzo hit one. I don't think it's landed yet. And he's an MVP candidate. You just got everybody on this roster any given day, they can come in during a big moment, and they have enough confidence because of their manager and because of the culture that they can come in and they can deliver. And this team is 22-6 through 28 games.
And what's amazing about it is they're 22-6 without Kyle Schwarber, without Jason Hayward, which is a huge – I mean, he's been out with a wrist injury. I mean, this team has been doing it with the backups and people that were coming in as utility players.
Yeah, it's a super team. It really is. There's enough depth. They've drafted well enough, and they've been taking pretty much hitters the last 4 or 5 years in the first round and then scattering pitchers throughout. But they've got some impact bats that can come in during an injury spell. I mean, like you mentioned, Schwarber goes off first week of the year. Hayward's kind of been on the shelf. Bryant missed a day with an ankle roll. There's enough depth here, and there's still more depth to come. That's what's crazy about it. You know, the baseball, the business side of things here at Wrigley Field, they are both moving up and to the right, and it's a great scene to see. And I'll tell you what's different. You know, you think about the 03 team and, you know, the 07 team and the 08 team. When free agents came in, there was a lot of pressure on these free agent players that came in, and they sort of wilted under that pressure. This group, it's the opposite. You go 180. You know, these guys come in and they embrace the challenge, and they wear shirts that says embrace the target. And, you know, Jason Hayward's been in the playoffs. John Lackey's been in the playoffs. Ben Zobrist has a World Series ring. They brought in the right guys that bring championship pedigrees, and that was what was missing last year, guys that had been there, guys that had done that. And they have that now amongst this roster. So they addressed it perfectly.
Okay, so from your vantage point, what is the weakest point of this super team? What are the things that if you look towards a trade deadline or you look to, you know, improving a 22-6 record, what would you say has to be or could be improved?
You know, the biggest weakness last year was they didn't put balls in play in the postseason. They faced the Mets. The guys came in throwing 95, 96, 97, and they struck out too much. They addressed that in the offseason.
Well, Max Scherzer was there's a good example today. Max Scherzer is an ace.
They pounded Max Scherzer. They pounded him. This is a guy that just signed a max contract, $200 million. This is supposed to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. And this lineup shelled him. I mean, they kicked him out of the game in like the fifth or sixth inning. This is supposed to be a guy who is one of the elite pitchers in the game, and they had seven hits and I think seven runs off of him. So, you know, there are on days, there are off days, and I'm sure this is one of Max Scherzer's worst days. That being said, I mean, you can't take away what this team did to Washington and won the series in Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh and Washington are two really good teams.
They're playoff teams.
And they've been blasting them. Like, they've been up pretty much every inning, you know, aside from a couple losses. But, I mean, like, the Cubs have been in control here. It's their team. It's their time. And, you know, if they stay healthy, they're going to be making a run into the Final Four. They're going to be in the NLCS no matter what.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, to watch this happen, it's even hard to talk about it. I mean, I hate the excellence that we're seeing at 22-6 almost makes it boring.
I mean, you try not to overrate it, too, but, I mean, they're on pace for 100 wins.
Plus.
I mean, that
hasn't been for like 120 wins.
Well, okay, even more. I mean, they're going to get over 100, though. And, you know, Len Casper made this point on TV the other day. He said that they may have the best offense, the best defense, the best pitching staff in the rotation, the best bullpen, and the best manager. I mean, you never are able to say that about a baseball team because it's so random and there's so many guys. I mean, 25 guys on a team. That being said, though, this mix is special. And I'll tell you what's the most interesting about our entire conversation here. We haven't spent a red second on the White Sox.
No, we will.
And they're in first place, too.
We're going to do that right after the break. Sam Panionovich is with us talking Cubs and Sox. I mean, this is unprecedented to have two teams that are playing at this level. The White Sox winning tonight against Minnesota. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the South Side. Sam, stick with us. Sam Panionovich joining us to talk about the unbelievable start for Chicago baseball. And it's just what Chicago needs because, you know, they're trying to figure out how to do frozen on ice over at the United Center for the next month after both of those teams exited. Bulls didn't even make the playoffs. But the Cubs and Sox deliver for sports fans both in first place. The White Sox right now, leading the Twins 5-4 in the fifth inning. Todd Frazier at the plate. Sam Pinjanovic joins me now. The White Sox, way more of a surprise than the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about, you know, where we stood in the early part of March, you look at the Cubs as being World Series favorites, and the White Sox were sort of near the middle, maybe more towards the third rung out of four, you know, in that 50-75% range, that they weren't really going to make much noise. And right now, first place in the AL Central, four games up on the Tigers, I believe. But they're, you know, overshadowed by how good the Cubs are. You know, the Cubs are ahead of everybody. They're on top of the mountain right now. But yeah, the White Sox are probably the third or fourth best team in baseball, and they're being overshadowed by the team from the North. I mean, this team is pitching probably better than anybody with Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Matt Latos has been a surprise. The best bullpen in the league, and timely hitting. So, I mean, both teams realistically, Justin, at this point in time, we're in the first week of May, you've got two first-place teams. And yesterday, for the first time ever, you had four first-place teams playing in Chicago. You had the White Sox against the Red Sox and the Cubs and Nationals. So, I mean, that's a big deal. And I asked Rob Manfred about that. I said, you know, what does it mean to have two teams in one of your biggest markets do well? And he said point blank, when the biggest teams in our biggest markets are playing well, it's good for business. So it's a good thing for baseball to have both the Cubs and the White Sox playing extremely well.
The White Sox, you know, this week, surprisingly, even though his play was deteriorating, released John Danks, who was essentially the fifth starter for the squad. They brought up Eric Johnson yesterday. He didn't pitch well. We're seeing Latos tonight struggle. I mean, the one thing I would wonder about is the back end of the starting pitching rotation. Talk about that. What are some of the options for the White Sox to replace John Danks?
They gave Danks about five tries. You know, they gave him an opportunity. That was the plan. You know, I feel like they have four good starters. The fifth one's a problem. It's a problem pretty much across Major League Baseball. It's hard to find a good fifth starter. So let's remember that first and foremost. That being said, John Danks, I think, got four or five tries. He was 0-for-4 with an ERA in the seventh. And that was enough for Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, Jerry Reinsdorf, to pull the lawnmower back and get Danks out and, you know, pretty much cut him essentially. So they're just trying to prove to this team that if you can't perform and if you can't contribute to winning ball games, there's no room for you.
Right.
And at the end of the day, sports is a business. It's about going where you should be. You know, if you're in first place, continue the trend, get into the postseason. That's the message that was sent. They're here to win. This isn't cute in April. They want to go and they want to play in October. So they feel like as long as John Danks is off the squad, they're a better team. That's what this move meant. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that. So now they're going to bring up some younger players. Eric Johnson got shelled last night. They've got Jacob Turner, Miguel Gonzalez. I know Tim Lincecum is an option. He pitched a showcase today in Arizona. They're going to be extremely aggressive at trying to find that fifth and final guy.
Do you see the White Sox, you know, having such a strong start, which Rick Hahn said had to happen, making a deal, trying to be aggressive when it comes to trading and trying to get better more than they would in, say, a year where they're middling in the middle of the, you know, five games out, six games out?
This is a time where you go for it. I mean, they didn't make many moves in 2005 because they felt like they were confident with this group. I mean, the only trade they made was for Jeff Blum, who, ironically enough, hit a home run in game three to win the
World
game.
Series.
You know, it worked out for them. But I feel like they need a left-handed bat in the middle of that lineup, and that's been bantied about for weeks now. You know, the Rockies aren't a good baseball team, and they can part with Carlos Gonzalez. That's been a rumor that's been pretty hot. He's a left-handed bat. You know, he can hit anywhere from second to fifth in the lineup, gets on base, good speed, decent outfielder, but he brings some power, and that's a short porch there at U.S. Cellular. It's only 335 to right. So, you know, they don't have many left-handed power bats, and they feel that, you know, if they can get this guy in, I've been told they're aggressive, they are seeking it out, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Carlos Gonzalez in black and white pretty soon.
Wow, that'd be great. All right, so the Cubs, the Crosstown Classic doesn't actually take place until July, and it's a weird one
this
year, right?
And then two at Wrigley, I believe. It's only four games.
What a waste. It should be six games, and it should be one weekend and then another weekend. That's bogus.
It should be 10 games. I mean, given how they're playing, I mean, it's been, you know, two of the better teams in the league. But, you know, I expect that both sides of town will be packed. You know, I talked to Matt Bubala about this last night, and he was calling out White Sox fans. He doesn't understand why they don't go to the game.
when the team is good. And I told them, look, you've got to be good until August or September. That's right. Just the way it is on the south side. But it's been exciting, Justin. I mean, there's no way around it.
I would say, Sammy, that's the way it is around Major League Baseball. I didn't get a chance to say this to Matt last night because he was harping on me as a Sox fan and why I don't go before Memorial Day. But when I'm watching SportsCenter, watching baseball tonight, and they're showing highlights of some of the best players from Giancarlo Stanton to home runs by Miguel Cabrera or great pitching by, you know, Scherzer or, you know, Strasburg. They're in empty parks. We saw when the Cubs were playing the Pirates. It was empty parks. MLB doesn't seem to be doing that great, except for places that are tourist-friendly like Wrigley Field.
And I get in this argument all the time. You know, I try and take my fan glasses off and put on my reporter glasses, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm a White Sox fan from the Southeast side, and I went to games probably four or five times a month as a kid, pretty much through my 21st birthday, so I was always going. I never understood why other people didn't go. That being said, though, I think the comparison between the Wrigley Field attendance and U.S. Cellular Field attendance, like, you can't even compare them. It's not fair. Like, it really isn't. And people always, like, hinge on that. You know, a lot of Cub fans go, oh, well, there were 10,000 people there. That's never going to change. It's not a reflection on the ball club. It's just I never have a solid reason. I mean, it's expensive to go to the ball game now. To bring a family of four, it's probably $500 a night, and I understand that. And that the old joke, as you know full well, is that White Sox fans have more blue-collar fans that have bigger families, and that's always been the joke. But, right. You know, that's not that far off the map. So, you know, they're going to wait for the team to be playing in a big moment. And you know that if they play well through August and September – That place will fill up.
Yeah. Like, I would even say a little bit earlier, July. Yeah. The year they went to the
I don't know. But
you know, the year they went to the World Series, when they went to the World Series, the interleague games, I remember specifically, we talked to Aaron Rowan about that game against the Dodgers where they came back and it was a July game and that's when you get weekends at the Cell, nice weather, and they're playing a team and that, you know, that draws, you will see big crowds at the Cell. And I'm not saying a Tuesday day game. But definitely, you know, weekends when the Sox are winning.
Yeah, and that's fair. I remember Pierzynski had a walk-off homer in that game. We were actually at that game as kids. So that was an awesome one. But, yeah, it's going to cost you, like you said, a big-name opponent on a weekend in the middle of summer, or they're going to have to be playing well through September. The people will come around, but it's almost like they want you to prove that you're worth their money. I mean, like, it's hard-earned money here on the South Side.
That's not right.
You can't disagree with that.
As it should be, Sam. As it should be. Sam Panionovic, WGN Radio Sports, talking Cubs and Sox and the great, great start to the season. Thanks for joining us tonight. Have a great weekend.
Take care, guys.
It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Well, what a big week for the news. Obviously, the Lucas Museum, Trump and his Taco Bowl. I mean, even, you know, tonight will be a telling night when it comes to shootings in the area. And also the Cubs Sox.
Yay.
So much to talk about tonight, and that's why we bring in sort of I'm trying to think of like a regular name for you, Mario, like social commentator.
Hey, man, if you know.
Social mediator.
There it is. Social mediator.
That's pretty good.
Do I get some, like, does Steve Cochran hand out extra money to people?
No, he does. That's how it works. Mario Smith, of course, a poet here in Chicago, commentator. He's the host of News from the Service Entrance on WHBK. We'll get into that. On WHBK in Hyde Park. He's also doing readings this summer. He's hosting the Harper Court Music Series, and he's also hosting the NAACP Act So Awards at the Little Black Pearl. When's it coming up?
Tomorrow night,
47th and Greenwood.
Down the street from Obama's house, where he's never at, with that cop sitting in front of that place all the time.
He hasn't been there for how long? They come back. But.
I can probably say with great certainty, you'll know when Obama's in the neighborhood of Hyde Park because you can't drive anywhere. You have to walk everywhere.
And they just shut it down.
Shut that bad boy down.
And there's always one police officer in front of his house, even though they haven't been there.
What if a group of just wild animals came and just ran over his yard? Did that one guy get out the truck and fight the animals? No.
Sounds like a good movie.
That would be great.
Yeah. the wild animals.
the wild.
We've got a problem. We got wolverines and horses, and they're trying to take over Obama's house. All right, so let's talk. I mean, let's start with the Lucas Museum. Big story this week about building on the lakefront. The one thing that Melody Hobson said was that this is going to be a great opportunity for black and brown students. They come in for the black and brown children of Chicago will be robbed of an opportunity. Thanks, Chicago. Thanks, Friends of the Park. What's your take on that?
I think when first of all, I think Melody Hobson's awesome because she brought Prince to Promontory Point. So there.
You got that. Okay.
So whatever I say, I love her. I don't know, man. You know what? The one constant in Chicago in the summer is that people go to the parks. They're now getting to the point where it's kind of crowded in those parks. And I think you build a big, giant, sprawling museum. Okay, fine. But it's the Lucas Museum, and he's great. It's like one good movie made eight times.
You know what I'm saying? Good point.
So how much of this is going to be about teaching kids the craft, teaching people how movies are made? What's the curriculum going to be like in this place? And then it's just this big, giant blob right where they should have built Soldier Field to begin with.
Right.
So, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, but on the other, I'm like, yeah. I don't think bringing kids. I think whenever I hear, like, Rahm Emanuel bring kids into stuff, I get nervous. And I'm starting to get nervous when I hear adults talk about how it's for the children when the children are in peril.
Right. Lee Bay was in here, and he said that he felt some sort of pride on the idea that the location was accessible and was gave opportunities for the South Side.
Well, I mean, that can't be disputed, but the energies right now should probably be put in different directions from philanthropists. If you want to help, I understand.
Yeah, $700 million can go a long way.
$700 million, man. Look, that can do a lot for kids who don't have boots in the winter, who don't have a social program to go to after school, whose neighborhoods are ravaged by crime.
Don't have a job in the summer, right?
Get a job in the summer. There's a lot you could do. With $700 million. That's Star Wars 1 through 50.
Not even.
That's one.
The Batman versus Superman made $900 million.
And you know what? Don't ever make another one of those. That was cool. Just stop. Hold.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Donald Trump yesterday in Cinco de Mayo.
That dude is so funny.
Tweeting out a photo of him with a taco bowl saying, I love Hispanics. I the greatest taco bowls. It rang tone deaf.
Yeah,
and it continues to do that, right? I mean, but the question I have for you is, and we were arguing about this last night, do you think that he knows what he's doing?
He doesn't know what he's doing.
So you think it is tone deaf? You think he's tone deaf? Like, I'll just take a picture of this.
I do whatever I want to do because all Mexican people eat tacos out of a bowl. No Mexican I know would ever be like, you know what? That's exactly what we do.
But don't you think he knows that?
No.
You don't think so, huh?
I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of feel like if you get to the point where you're the presumptive Republican nominee for president, that anything you do at a certain point is... I mean, I truly believe that, you know, Donald Trump is in a position where he knows what he's doing and he's pushing buttons and he's having fun with it in a certain way. And he's pushing buttons because everyone knows what his relationship is with the Latino community based on all that wall stuff. So he's kind of like just kind of messing around. Now, Rance Priebus at the RNC, he's like, no, he's reaching out. He's trying. You think he's trying?
He's going to build that wall out of taco bowls? I can't even get it out of my mouth. Is he going to build a wall with taco bowls? Because if he is, then come on, man.
What's Donald Trump's... I mean, I don't want to speak for the black community, but what's his relationship?
Yeah, it's bad, son.
They don't like him?
No. Mm-mm. We got a thing about white folks with orange hair, man. That's scary stuff. You're trying to scare us. I'm not trying to represent all black people.
Yeah,
I'm
I was going to say.
The 10 black people that I talk to on a regular basis about stuff like this, we're all scared of them. Horrified. There's a rap record out. I don't even know who made it. Some kids in Baltimore. I hope he never goes to Baltimore.
Yeah.
They're going to get him. Beat him up.
I like that you speak for all black people.
I don't.
I think that's a really smart thing. From here on out, I'll be like, Mario's here to speak for all.
Let me tell you how dumb an idea that is. You're trying to get me killed. I still got to go to the community. They haven't kicked me out.
We all get around and we talk. I've talked to every single black person.
I tell you, the 10 black people that I have a regular conversation about stuff like this, we all think Donald Trump is a dangerous person.
Right.
And then on Twitter, the community, everybody thinks he's dangerous. But I said on your show, maybe the second time I was here, whoever has putting their faith into Donald Trump is insane. I'm sticking to my story. I don't think he could be Hillary Clinton. And then that's another one. I'm not even all that like, yay.
Yeah, you don't like Hillary?
No, I don't like anybody. I'm mad at everyone.
Are you going to vote?
Yes.
Oh, there it is. There's a little pause there.
I'm going to vote. I'm not voting for Donald Trump, though. I don't care what they say. No. Never, ever.
Mario Smith is my guest tonight. He's our social mediator. He's the host of the NAACP AXO Awards, which will be at the Little Black Pearl tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
That's at 47th and Greenwood. He's also the host of WHBK's News from the Service Entrance, but we'll talk about that coming up. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Mario. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Mario Smith in studio with me. He's the host of the Tales or News from the Service Entrance.
Tales from the Crypt.
On WHBK, which you're thinking about leaving.
It's like this, real quick. They want us at WHBK, they want the community DJ members to give them background checks, the University of Chicago does. I'm not doing that. I've been there 15 years in June, and if I did that, that would go against everything I hold dear to my heart. I love that place. It has given me opportunities that I probably
wouldn't
have.
They're going to ask for a background check after you've worked there for 15 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, to quote my man, Race Bannon, is this a credit check? Are you guys buying us like cars?
We're going to buy a house.
Are you giving me a house in Hyde Park? Can I get one of those brownstones, one of those graystones maybe? Otherwise, no, I'm not doing that. So
do you know what the reason is? Like, are they just a new policy?
I have absolutely no idea. When we talked to them, they couldn't answer the question. So I've decided that since if we don't do the background check, we get suspended beginning in June. So I think, unless something changes, May 26th will be my last show at WHBK, which
shame.
Is killing me, but I'm not saying background check. No way in hell. For a free place that I've devoted my life to, that they've given me, like, they owe me money for talking about WHBK. I've said it 5 times. How much is it to say something 5 times on WGN? Like $50,000?
Yeah, right.
So they owe me $50,000 times 15 years.
Right. There you go. Not WHBK, WHBK.
Yeah, to this now, it's $100,000.
Right. You're also hosting the NAACP AXO Awards at the Little Black Pearl tomorrow at 47th Street. All right, so you are our social mediator. Let's talk about some of the stories. You know, the one that we haven't talked since the news came out a couple weeks ago about the shootings going down in the month of April. There was actually, the city of Chicago saw a regression in terms of, in a positive way, of the number of shootings after, the first quarter of the year. I mean, we set records.
It was bad all over, man. It was dangerous everywhere. But you know what? When I hear that they say the numbers have gone down or the numbers, I'm always skeptical about what swath are they using to cover the city in terms of numbers. That's just me. Because I've heard a lot in the last couple of days of people getting shot on Lakeshore Drive. Now this is new thing. It's like cowboys and Indians or cowboys running up on each other and shooting each other in cars and people getting shot on the expressway. Yeah, I don't know, man.
The woman from Buffalo Grove.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wisconsin. Obviously tonight, you know, this is always the byproduct of the first nice night in Chicago, and tonight is going to be an amazing night.
Yeah,
this will be sort of a... This will be a telling night.
You know, when I used to be against hearing people say, you know, when the weather gets warmer, it's going to get worse. But, I mean, that's biometeorology. That's really true. People change when it gets warmer. They get...
Well, they're also they're a little bit more shorter fused.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're also outside.
But exactly. I know that the first warm night in Chicago, for me, has always been like, okay, you know... What beefs have been festering all winter, but now they don't even do that anymore.
Because they're beefing.
So they're beefing all the time. So tonight will still be a very interesting night, a very telling night. We'll see. I hope Chicago is safe. I would love for it to be safe.
Do you notice anything? I mean, you're in Hyde Park now. You got out of South Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice more policing? Do you notice anything change?
Oh,
in
man,
the
they had the amount of police in South Shore like they do in Hyde Park.
Hyde Park, they're protecting.
Ooh-wee. Man, please. They protect an empty house. So you know they
from
would
all
be,
the wild animals. Right?
The man ain't been there in 8 years. He is president and doesn't even go to his house. And if he goes, what is he like? Oh, I forgot something.
He said he's staying. They're staying in D.C. too.
Yeah, he should. He should. The kids are big now. I mean, I remember when they were little kids at the barbershop with him. You know, that's crazy. that those two are big.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. That's cool. All right, shout out my cab driver, Bo, because he didn't believe me when I told him what I was doing?
I'm going to WGN. He's like, yes, sure you are.
You are not going to WGN. I'm like, yes, I am. I am going to GN. Give me a break.
You're a big Southsider, so you must be happy about the White Sox. But you're also, I mean, you have a good relationship with the Cubs.
I'm pleased with Chicago baseball because when it's on, I can watch it. When it's bad, I don't watch it. It's like I didn't watch any of the Bulls. I think I watched two games this year. That was bad.
You know, that's the one thing I think that is hard to get over. In this modern day of sports, a Chicago sports team should at least make the playoffs.
You would think.
Baseball, I understand. So 162 games, you're like only 16, whatever, eight teams make it. But in basketball, I mean, you got to be really bad to not make it in the top eight teams.
I got a whole lot of reasons, and I can't say them on the radio, what my feelings are about the Chicago Bulls. But to stick to the story, I'm really digging the White Sox. I think it's a pleasant surprise that they are as good as they are. Thing is, man, it's still really early.
Yeah.
Even with the Cubs, although it's a different kind of thing. Is it just me? With the Cubs, it's like almost, they're going.
Yeah.
May not be this year, but they're going.
Well, you know, what I think it is, and you know, here at WGN, what people are talking about, you know, it's almost like they build up, and they're building it up. They know that there's something in the lore of the Chicago Cubs. So now if this Chicago Cubs team does not win the World Series this year, it'll be an epic letdown of proportions. And it's a weird thing to be at game 29 or whatever it is, game 30 to 28, for us to have built up in our heads once again a thing that ultimately may let us down.
I think it would be a big mistake for Cub fans to feel that way. I think they should be really happy about their team. I think they should keep an eye on their team, man, because like your guest earlier said, they have depth, and they got depth in the minors. And they can get anybody that really wants to be here. They got money. You know, they're building, a patio so you could drink all night and disturb the neighbors even more in Wrigleyville. And yeah, it's stuff going on. So I think it's really cool that both sides of town are popping, man. That's good. Baseball is a great game when it's played right, and both sides seem to be playing right. Plus, it doesn't hurt to have a guy over your shoulder on the south side going, hell, you know I got your job if you screw this up, G. I'm right behind you. I'm behind you.
All right, last thing we want to talk about is the untimely death of Prince. We didn't get a chance to talk about Prince. Means a lot to you. I mean, obviously, I brought him up that he was in Promontory Point for Melody and George's wedding.
He was amazing, man. He still is amazing. Any human being that could do something really great 39 times, that's not bad. 39 albums in a career is not bad. 40 years... You know, just
crazy.
It, for me, and I, those same 10 black people that I talked to about stuff, we were talking about Prince and how he's a generational artist, right? I have a different thing about Prince than someone a little bit older than me may have. He was my teenage years, even my formative screwing up, messing up bad years. Even when certain songs remind me of certain people. It was real, and the whole thing back then with him was very ethereal. So him dying caught a lot of people they put them in a place they didn't really want to be, because it's hard to imagine this planet without him in it,
right?
And he's gone, and the way that they're then the other thing, all the tinfoil hat people came out when he died. You know, he was this, he was that, he did this, he did, you don't know. Everybody thinks they're on CSI, Justin. Everybody everybody's an X-File person.
Well, what I like about Prince too, I mean, even today in Wicker Park they're tributing parade. If you go on First Avenue in Minneapolis, there's a tribute. I mean, it's ultimately one of the artists that across race, social class, everything, you know, resonated positively.
I think that's because he was honest to his craft. He didn't cheapen any part of it. He started and finished being authentic. If you can be authentic as an artist, you have won every imaginable fight you could fight.
We just, last night, Rich Cohen was here. We talked about his book about the Rolling Stones.
Oh, there you go.
The Rolling Stones were, like, for them in the 60s and the 70s, that was that's what they sold, was authenticity.
They were authentic.
And they kind of lost it when they went to the big arenas. That's not as much. Now it's a nostalgia.
I want
to
read that book, too.
It's really interesting. But authenticity played a big role in that conversation with the Rolling Stones.
And I think just the effect that he had on other musicians like D'Angelo and Van Hunt and people of that ilk, you know, how Andre 3000 basically did the most wonderful Prince impression on his side of Speaker Box a Little Below, the Outkast album.
The Hey Now stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's all owed to the second greatest, he's not living, the second greatest musician of our time, because it's still Stevie Wonder for me. He's the greatest, and he really is the greatest living musician we have, I think. And
I think I saw something on Facebook that was like, put security around
Stevie Wonder. All day. Give him something so he can see all of it. Let's get this. We should fete that man while he's here.
Mario, great to see you, man. Always a pleasure.
These visits are always fun, and they're never long
enough.
And
thanks for coming across the bridge, too.
I did not do it.
You didn't do it. What'd you do?
I got a ride across.
He will not walk across the bridge.
Never.
I love it.
Not doing it.
Okay, so let me just run down what you got. You're hosting the NAACP AXO Awards tomorrow at the Little Black Pearl. What time?
3 p.m. Okay. It's going to be fun. I'm going to have on a suit.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
I'm going all
That's out. At 47th Street in Greenwood. you also host that for now. The news from the service entrance on WHBK.
And the Clock is the Enemy at the Promontory.
There
first
you go.
Sunday of each month.
And then you're hosting the Harper Court Music Series, which will be this summer.
Yeah, with my man Eric Williams from Silver
Room
and the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
The same people that are trying to make me sign some I don't want to sign. It's a bipolar relationship we have.
Great to see you.
Yeah, man.
See
always.
You in a month.
Yeah, brother. Man,
all right.
You know, I'm good. I'm the Nipsey Russell of Chicago radio. I show up on everybody's station. I don't care.
The Sox actually up 10-4 now. I'm blowing it open. Coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, Steve Gadlin is here. The local inventor and innovator. The man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, who won on Shark Tank. Got a development deal with Mark Cuban. Brings his newest ideas here before he brings them to Mark Cuban. And he is going to join us at 10 o'clock with a brand new business idea for us to workshop. To critique, to give him some positive thoughts and ideas. But first, all right, you know what? We got to talk about Captain America Civil War. The movie's out right now. It's getting great reviews. It's out to the public. Come on. I mean, this is a perfect movie. If you're a superhero fan, you like blockbusters, it's perfect because there's like 47 superheroes in it. Great. Joining us on the line is Adam Witt. He is the man behind the Movie Guys, which is a great group giving the industry the business. Get all things Ground Zero for movies and comedy. You can find them at movieguys.net, also on iTunes. Adam Witt saw the movie Captain America Civil War. Adam, welcome to the show. How'd you like the movie?
Justin, I am so glad to be on your show to talk about this incredible summer blockbuster, this culmination of all these Marvel events, and unfortunately, it was sold out. Yeah, so I actually didn't get in to see it. But luckily, you know what wasn't sold out was the Chuck Norris double feature at Quentin Tarantino's New Beverly Cinema. Huh. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to go ahead and review Lone Wolf McQuaid, which was great. All right, so J.J. McQuaid, he's a tough cop, right? And just ask his police chief, who's always on his butt. But when David Carradine's path of criminal mayhem comes across McQuaid, it's time for McQuaid to spring into action using his martial arts.
All right, we're going to go ahead and fade Adam out there. You know what? I think what we'll do is we'll go to Paul Preston, another guy behind the Movie Guys, giving the industry the business. Paul actually got in. Paul, welcome to the show.
Oh, Justin, I'm so excited to talk about this culmination of superheroes who've gathered together in what I believe is like the 12th movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's absolutely amazing. You're living in good time.
And you were on time for the movie, so you got in.
I got in, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I know a guy.
All right, so Paul, let me ask you about I don't know a lot about these movies except for the fact that I love them. They're great summer blockbusters. But where are we in the Marvel Universe when it comes to this movie, Captain America Civil War? Is it an Avengers movie or is it a Captain America movie?
It's technically the third Captain America movie, but by now we've introduced so many characters, it would be impossible to tell a single story about one of these Avengers without including a bunch of the other ones.
Right.
At the end of Age of Ultron, they kind of took a whole bunch of people under their wing for the new Avengers team, for lack of a better word. And now Captain America doesn't want to sign this treaty that the government wants because he has been a lot of collateral damage. You've seen the movies. They helped the world by destroying a city.
Right.
And so the government says, we want to keep you guys in check. Iron Man says no. Cap says, Cap says no. Iron Man says, yes, this is something we need to do. And friction begins. And then they got to bring in all of them, pretty much except Thor and Hulk, appear in this movie to then have a battle of ideologies. And then it, of course, comes to fisticuffs because, as you said, it's a summer blockbuster.
Pretty boring summer blockbuster, right?
Yeah. Here's the great thing about the grand scheme. It all started with 2008, of course, Iron Man, and everyone got their individual movie, so now they're all starting to come together. This makes a lot of sense. We've seen all their origins. We don't need to do all that again, and now we can just have adventures. And it's leading to one and two parts of the Avengers Infinity War,
The whole thing
goes to outer space and has a huge galactic battle. I cannot wait.
And that, is that possibly where we'll see Guardians of the Galaxy? I was just kind of making a joke about that. But will they show up at some point in this?
You know, I heard you say that, and that's, I think, where they're going to be folded in. Suddenly, all these parts of me. I mean, Thor is already cosmic, right?
Right.
The only guy who's going to be freaked out probably is Tony Stark, because this is going to be. He already went to space at the end of Avengers, even for a brief second, and had PTSD for three movies now,
right?
Dealing with it. So, the heights they shoot for are unforeseen in Hollywood. I mean, they're just shooting so high, and every time they shoot there, they nail it. And they did it again with this movie.
They did. Okay. That's what I was going to ask.
Absolutely.
You love it?
Oh, my God. I don't normally talk with this pace and high pitch. Yes. I love it.
Well, you know, I mean, I read some reviews that said it was a much more serious movie. It kind of isn't as funny as some of the others where they kind of have the Hulk smash kind of jokes and things like that. That this one is almost takes itself really serious. This is a serious issue that they have to come to terms with.
Well, it does play out like a Jason Bourne movie until suddenly all the superheroes, you know, come to blows. Then it's a full-on superhero movie. And somehow these Russo brothers, who directed it, they also directed The Winter Soldier. So if you remember the tone from that movie, it was a little more, you know, military and a little more, it was just kind of dark and a little violent. That, they bring that again, you know, and expect you to just go with it, and you do. And when they flip it to a superhero movie, you go with that too. Again, right. They just hit everything.
Now this is
there's no reason you should suddenly flip to having tons of fun with superheroes fighting each other. You do.
You don't need comedy. You just got fun with superheroes fighting each other. All right.
Here's how great this movie is. They have Spider-Man. Now I've always said we need to get Spider-Man out of high school because he's a man. It's right there in the name. We bring back young Spider-Man, and I still loved it.
I did see him in the trailer. He's kind of like, oh, hey, I'm Spider-Man. Right.
He's so much fun. I mean, it's just illegal that other people are putting movies out while Marvel's making them.
Well, this is based on a comic book, right? This is actually Civil War was a comic book in the Marvel, so they're not just making the story up.
Correct. And the Infinity War that we're all leading to was also in the comic. All the characters they bring in have been in the comic. You're introduced not only to Spidey here, who you know already, and they brilliantly, by the way, introduce Spidey as if part of the Avengers already know his backstory, so then they don't have to reintroduce it to us again, because we don't need to see Uncle Ben die like a fifth time or whatever it is.
Right.
But they bring in Black Panther, and they do it so smooth, and so, I mean, it's just, I stand amazed.
Paul Preston, they have already laid out how often they're going to bring us a Marvel movie, a Marvel superhero movie. We've just like with Star Wars, we know for the next 6 years or whatever it is, we're going to see these. I mean, is there pretty much one of these movies, either a Captain America movie or a Marvel or an Avengers movie, an Infinity movie, whatever it is, on docket for, you know, the next 5 to 10 years?
Yes, absolutely. Because they have the two Avengers Infinity War movies. That's 2 years right there. That's two summers. Doctor Strange, the end of this year, with Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. Black Panther was introduced in Civil War. He'll get his own movie. And again, brilliantly, to where you kind of get what he's all about. We won't have to, you know, worry about a whole origin story. He can just have crazy Black Panther adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they took Inhumans off their schedule. And if you want to know what Inhumans is, that's where you'll have to ask Adam Witt.
Yeah, right. Okay, for you, I mean...
Oh, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2, just for you.
And Guardians of the Galaxy 2, right.
Already
and,
shooting.
And
yeah.
I think Thanos needs his own movie, too. You know, I'm a big Thanos
guy. if he comes out okay at the end of the Infinity War, yeah, maybe they give him his own movie.
Yeah, but, he'll be the future. Yeah. So you know, this movie is always going to be compared to what they're doing on the other shop, DC Comics, Batman vs Superman. Obviously, I don't think it's a great comparison because, you know, you've seen momentum for both of these going in different directions. But talk about what, you know, I mean, when Batman vs. Superman didn't do so well with sort of the comic book sector, do you see that franchise rebounding, even though it made $900 million, rebounding and being able to be at the level of credit and respect that the Marvel movies are at right now?
Wow, I don't know. I mean, this Marvel is unlike anything. I mean, I think it surpasses Star Wars. I mean, we had plenty of bad Star Wars movies. There just hasn't been a bad Marvel movie. Since Kevin Feige took the Marvel Cinematic Universe back in 08 with Iron Man's launch, I mean, it's been gold since then. So DC, I mean, they're sticking to a lot of the same tricks for the future movies. Zack Snyder directed Batman vs. Superman. He's going to direct the Justice League film. Don't know, you know, if there was a lot of criticism, maybe go a different direction. I mean, the directorial choices for Marvel have been insane. The guy who directed Ant-Man directed The Breakup. There's no reason that movie should have been a success and made $340 million worldwide, but it did. And I think Flash just lost its director. I think Aquaman may be shooting. Again, too little too late from them. I would say even though they're late to the party, they should take their time because that's what's paid off for Marvel. But I think they're going to rush it to try and catch up, and that could bite them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, didn't DC was on top of the world with the Heath Ledger, you know, Christian Bale Batmans. I mean, those were the movies of that time before Marvel sort of came back and took it back.
Absolutely. Yeah. Box office as well. Dark Knight, still one of the top five, I think, grossing movies of all time. You know, they are blessed with great villains. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if they ever get critiques, it's that the villains aren't all that fantastic. You don't have a Joker, Riddler, Penguin, that type of thing. But over in those Nolan films, Christopher Nolan movies, they certainly have that going for them. If they can capitalize on that. That's why I think they want to do Suicide Squad, get a little more Joker. People love Joker. Let's do that again. So that's what we're getting next up from DC. But this really, seeing Civil War, so there was a no win for Batman versus Superman unless it was a great movie. In my opinion, it was not. So to come out before Civil War, now Civil War's come out, and it really just bends Batman versus Superman over its knee, pulls his pants down, and gives it a huge spanking. It's somewhat of an embarrassment to see how successfully these Marvel characters debate the issues of having a world safety patrol, for lack of a better word, you know, someone on the night watch for all of humanity, and how successful that is or how dangerous it is, you know, with the collateral damage and everything. Whereas Batman Superman did all that, it all came down to some kidnapping plot as to why they ended up fighting. It's a complete missed opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with, you're not waiting for the characters to come to blows in Civil War, because while they're debating all this stuff, they're still having Avengers adventures, which now I see why they never called one of their movies that. Avengers adventures.
Yeah. Paul Preston is the man behind Movie Guys. You can find his stuff at themovieguys.net, also on iTunes and on Twitter at Movie Guys. Movie Guys giving the industry the business. Paul, thanks for taking some time out to talk about Captain America Civil War.
My pleasure. Don't miss it.
Fireworks at the Cell. The Minnesota Twins look to have thrown at Jose Abreu. That's always
get a little chippy.
Yeah, a little recipe for some chippiness. Both benches cleared. Surprisingly, Robin Ventura thrown out of the game because he argued that was intentional, because I believe it was Park, the Minnesota first baseman, was hit the inning earlier, and Abreu had hit a home run. So, and it was pretty obvious. Watching the rerun or the replay, it was just, I mean, it just threw right at his ribs. So things getting testy on the south side because Twins can't handle it. Can't handle the heat. Safe. There you go. So anyway, coming up, Steve Gadlin. He will be here, and we will do the frying pan. 312-981-7200. Are you excited? Can you feel it? Let's get, are you ready to get rocked? Oh, that should be the theme song to the frying pan. Do you want to get rocked? That's coming up. Steve Gadlin will be here. I wonder what the invention will be tonight. He does not share his inventions before, so I can have the same experiences as a listener at home, and it makes it easier for me to be honest in my responses to him, and to be able to field the questions and concerns and criticisms that are both on the phone and on text. So 312-981-7200. That's the number. When we come back, it's the frying pan. Do we want to get rocked? That's right. It's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brains behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can pull coals into it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Mark Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. How are you?
That's good. Did you like that Def Leppard, Let's Get Rocked?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
I think it sets the right mood because tonight I have one that people are going to get so excited about. I think your phone lines are going to light up tonight with people ready to give me some support.
I love your enthusiasm, Steve. There's nothing I love more than it. It actually pumps me up for the weekend, how much you are ready and how much you are prepared for the frying pan. Okay, my friend, why don't you tell us what this week's idea is?
Well, look, I have kids, you know, and they're starting to get into those young years where sports are a thing. You know, they have sports in gym class and kids play sports extracurricularly. And one of the things I noticed, though, and I think a lot of parents notice, is sports are not doing much to help a kid's self-esteem, especially if they're not very good at sports. You know, you've got some kids who are deemed better, some kids who are deemed worse. And I think that really sets up a hierarchy that goes on to plague them throughout the rest of their school years. So what I've designed is a new camp curriculum, and I call it the new sports camp. It's a sports camp where we play all the sports, soccer, tennis, basketball, football, baseball, but we take one key element out of those games. That element is the ball. That's right. We play our sports with no ball. Instead, we teach the kids to pantomime the sport, and that way everyone is successful. A kid can come up to the plate, and the pitcher mime pitches to him, and the kid can swing the bat and shout, "I got a home run," and then run all the bases and score some runs for his team. So, you know, same thing with all the sports. It gives kids an opportunity to really forge their own success in these sports.
Okay, the new sports camp.
That's the new sports camp. Yeah, it's a curriculum of sports, but we take away the ball. And we teach kids to pantomime through the game in a way that makes them feel more successful.
Right, it's just that. All right, you know what? I'm going to leave the questions for Download Nation. 312-981-7200. That's our phone number tonight. 312-981-7200. The new sports camp, essentially a sports camp that doesn't use balls.
Yes, there are no balls in the sports camp. And we teach the kids, you know, it's we teach them acting skills. We teach them to invent their own success. So the kids might run around the soccer field pretending to kick the ball and pass to each other. And then they let out a big kick and they score a goal. And everyone gets all excited and their self-esteem is boosted and everyone walks away a winner.
So this is an opportunity to help with kids' self-esteem.
Yeah, kids of all skill levels at sports, not just the athletic kids, but the kids who maybe aren't as good physically. But when you take the ball away, that really levels the playing field, no pun intended.
All right, the phone number 312-981-7200. The lines are lit up here. Pizza screening as we speak. 312-981-7200.
Here come the A's.
Yeah, we'll see. We will take a quick break to line them up and get everybody ready, and we will get some constructive criticism, some yays and some nays here on the download. It's the Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin, the new sports camp. Sports camp without a ball. Stay with us. Do we want to get rocked? Yeah, we're all jacked up here out of the Frying Pan. Steve Gadlin from IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, who won on Shark Tank, has a new business idea tonight, and we are we're going to take some calls and some texts here. Steve, once again, give us the elevator pitch for the new sports camp.
Yeah, the new sports camp is a special kind of sports camp for kids of all skill levels, where we play all the sports you would at a normal sports camp, minus one key thing. The ball. Instead, we teach kids to pantomime their way through sports and forge their own success. You know, they get to really invent how the game proceeds, and everyone walks home a winner, and everyone feels great at the end of the day.
All right. 312-981-7200. There's a lot of very eloquent texts and long-worded texts we're going to get to in a second, but let's go to Charles on the line. Charles, yay or nay to the new sports camp?
I don't get it. I got in my car and turned on the radio, and I had to double-check to make sure it was WGN. I thought it was The Onion, because I cannot believe this is a serious idea. Okay. I say it just delays someone understanding their own physical abilities in sports and just delays that. I don't think that does anyone any good.
Yeah, good point, Charles. That's been echoed as well a little bit about, aren't you doing a disservice to the children, Steve?
I don't understand why there's a disservice, though, because they're still going through all the motions of playing the sport. In fact, they're probably even more active, because even the kids who might not have the ball in a real game, well, now they're all doing fast breaks to the other side of the field. So they get just as much exercise, and they walk away with a big pat on the back. The coach is proud of everyone, because everyone scored a goal, everyone got a touchdown, everyone shot a last-second three-pointer to win the game. Mm-hmm. You know, 3-2-1 on the buzzer, everybody gets a three-pointer. So there's that kind of pantomime. That really gets everyone fired up and interested in sports, even the kids who wouldn't normally be. And everyone has a good time. So, no, I don't get the disservice.
Okay.
I see this as win-win. Not only both teams win, but it's a win-win situation for the kids.
All right. 312-981-7200. This is 262 says, this is a great idea. Nobody's feelings will get hurt. At the award ceremony, do they pantomime the trophies or certificates with invisible ones?
No, they're real trophies, real certificates, and that's, you know, again, part of your entry fee goes toward end-of-year trophy or end-of-camp trophy.
Okay. The new sports camp is not only stupid, it's destructive to kids. Kids need to learn how to develop self-esteem regardless of how they perform in sports. You're doing the kids a disservice by teaching them to ignore reality and create their own world. I feel sorry for them when they hit the workplace at 23 or whenever and they find out they can't change the world to be what they want it to be. Wow.
Well, I think this person is digging a little too deep. I mean, sure, you can imply there'll be all sorts of psychological implications, but really what happens is kids come home from camp and the parents say, "How'd you do at sports camp?" And they can say something like, "I won the game," or "I scored the winning touchdown," you know, and that makes their parents think better of the kid too. So again, win-win.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Linda. Linda, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
I think it's not good. I don't want to say it. Well, I find it stupid only because if the child is going to win, and he gets so much self-esteem, he goes out in the real world and plays the game for real and loses, what does he do then? I think it's just like how schools stop playing tag because somebody ends up being it.
Right.
But I just think it's, I just think it would do. I mean, I put myself in those shoes. If I won something constantly, I'm very small, so I was the last person chose for all the gym games in schools because I was very petite. So, and if I was a winner, 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 and then all of a sudden I lost, I think that would just kill me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't understand. I wouldn't understand. I wouldn't be able to comprehend it.
All right. Well, thanks, Linda. Thanks for sharing your story.
It sounds like the story of someone who's had a real rough time playing sports growing up, you know, always picked last. And that's maybe why she's a little pessimistic about this now. But, you know, imagine, though, if when she didn't have a story like I was always picked last, she had a story like I dunked over the tallest kid in my class.
Right.
And that can happen in the new sports camp because it's all pantomime and pretend.
Okay, let's go to John. John, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
That's a nay from me. You're teaching the kids then that everybody's going to get the job when you grow up and you go to interview. And that's not how the real world works. Some people get the job, some people don't get the job. And as far as sports go, as far as sports go, sports teach kids how to lose with dignity and how to lose gracefully. And they also teach kids sportsmanship, where if you're on a team and you want your team to win and maybe a couple kids on the team aren't as good, you're going to help those kids get better because you want your team to win. And so you're missing what sports is about.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks, John.
Can I tell you something,
that.
John? I think you're missing part of our curriculum because we do teach the kids losing with dignity. We do teach the kids to help each other out. All of that comes in a textbook pamphlet that they is reading material. So we still give them all of those lessons, you know, how it feels to lose, how to be a good sport. That's all part of reading material. You know, 50% of the new sports camp is actually going through reading material to learn those concepts. And then for the other half of the day, they're pantomiming the sports and everybody's winning. So it is the best of both worlds.
773 says, big nay. I understand the concept behind it, but what happens when they get to a game that has a real ball? If they don't hit the ball and they don't catch the ball, if they don't score a goal, how will that child feel? And then there's a side question that's other than the cat, has Mark Cuban accepted any of this guy's ideas?
Well, I haven't pitched any of the other ones to him. I'm still trying to work up the confidence through the frying pan. Now, it's a great question. What happens when they're faced with an actual ball? Can they still play the sport? And the answer is yes, because we teach them to pantomime these games very well. You know, we're not teaching sloppy pantomime. You know, when people pantomime holding a gun, you can tell the good pantomimes from the bad ones because the bad ones will stick out their thumb and finger and pretend that's a gun. But a good pantomime knows, no, that's not how you hold a gun, right? So we really teach them solid acting skills, solid pantomime. So someone looking with their eyes mostly closed wouldn't even know there's a ball there, not there. You know, the kids get this down and really learn to appreciate the pantomime physics of the ball so that if later they try to play with one, they're not going to be out of their element.
They'll understand it. Okay, let's go to Jim.
No, yeah.
Let's go to Jim. Jim, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
Well, I think we ought to have a special math camp as well and have all the kids fill out whatever they want on the test and always get an A. And they'll feel great about themselves.
Yeah, I think Jim's, I think that's a nay. I think he's making fun of you.
Yeah, and I think that's a common misconception, but these are not analogs because math is a science of absolutes, right? Sports is more of an art, and especially pantomime sports is an art form. So, you know, can I give you another example? Mm-hmm. You put Tom Cruise in a movie about Vietnam, and you see him in the movie holding a gun and fighting a battle. Well, guess what? That's pantomime, right? But he learns it so well that if you were to put Tom Cruise in a real war, he'd probably do pretty good on the battlefield because he's learned the acting skills to get through a situation like that.
Yeah. Let's go to Dave. Dave, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
Nay. And, you know, this is another way of settling for mediocrity in this country and not striving to be the best that you can be at the real world. And this guy would fit in perfectly in a Bernie Sanders world of everything that he's saying that we need to do. Free everything, and you don't have to work for anything. You just get it from your neighbor because you don't have enough courage to go up to your neighbor and ask for free stuff.
Yeah.
So let the government do it and let somebody like this guy instill that into the minds of the young.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Dave. Thanks for that. So he got political there.
Assumptions. Yeah, he's making a lot of assumptions about my political leanings. And I tell you, we're not settling for mediocrity. I don't know if he heard me pantomiming the part where I make the three-pointer as the buzzer goes down. That's excellence in sports. In fact, it's providing excellence for all kids in sports through pantomime and acting.
Let's go to Pat right before we go to the news here. Pat, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
I got to say nay. I feel like it's coming from a good place. Like it's I did come in a little late. Can I ask what age these kids are?
Say that again?
Can I ask what age these kids would be?
What age?
Yeah, this is all the way through senior year of high school. So, and again, this is it's a conceptual camp for age 2 through senior year of high school, an alternative to your normal sports camps and normal sports curriculum. So this is still, it's just a concept where, I'm hoping to build up enough confidence in the idea to take it to Mark Cuban for an investment pitch.
Yeah.
I feel like
he's into sports.
It'd be a good market for very younger kids. I don't know if it'd be good for anything past maybe first or second grade, because there's a certain point when you can't just give the kids here pantomime this, and then if they're going to go into the actual sport, nothing beats physical practice. I mean, I was a chubbier kid growing up, and I worked hard to get to be better in the sports that I played. And like even today, I see. My roommate is a coach. I'm not going to say 14. He's a lacrosse coach. And the kids that are going into the programs today even are just so babied by their parents. And it's, why isn't my kid getting playing time?
Well, we don't baby the kids.
Thanks,
we
Pat.
Don't baby.
You're not giving them the drive to do the better job. Everybody wins. That's just not how sports work.
Yeah, right. That would be my thought, too, Pat, that's not how sports works. Yeah.
No, you look at the difference between a first-year camper's basketball pantomime and a 13th-year camper's basketball pantomime, and you're going to see a huge difference. So these are kids that improve with their sports pantomime, and then ultimately with learning the concepts of the sports and the moves and the plays that our kids get to be a part of are like the stuff you see on TV and in the movies, no just sitting on the bench waiting to get thrown in the game or playing the backfield waiting for the other team to kick the ball over. Everyone's in it and they're executing, some amazing, even sometimes physically impossible plays through the magic of acting and pantomime.
All right. The new sports camp, a sports camp that doesn't use a ball, just does pantomime. That's the idea tonight from Steve Gadlin of the Frying Pan. 312-981-7200. We'll continue after the news. Stay with us. Do you want to get right? Everybody hit the stage. It's time for prom. That's my prom. Welcome back to the download here. It's time for the Frying Pan. Second half here. A lot of very, very articulate and eloquent texts tonight. We're going to get to them as well as the calls. Steve Gadlin joins me on the phone. Steve Gadlin, of course, from IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He's a star of the Frying Pan. He's here every week with a new idea to pitch his boss, Mark Cuban. Just before he brings it to Mark, he brings it to the download. Steve, tonight the idea is the new sports camp. Once again, give us the elevator pitch.
Yeah, so the new sports camp is a sports camp for kids from age 2 all the way up through high school. It's just like a normal sports camp. We play all the games. We play soccer, football, tennis, basketball, baseball, minus the ball. That's right. It's sports without the ball, and we teach the kids to act and pantomime their way through much more exciting games. Everybody walks away a winner. Everyone feels that smell of success and gets to go home and tell their parents some of the amazing things they did out on the court.
All right, let's go to Luke. Luke, yay or nay on the new sports camp?
I'm going to say nay to that. The question I had is, I know you mentioned that everybody's a winner, but how could that pitcher that gave up a home run to every kid on the team be a winner that day?
Right. Thanks, Luke. That was my question, too.
Well, a lot of what's happening with the pantomime happens inside the kids' own heads, too. So they're each kind of telling their own narrative throughout the game. So while the batter may say, oh, it's a grand slam in the ninth inning, the pitcher may be thinking, and strike 3, we win the World Series.
So, you know, there's opportunity for multiple outcomes, which is a great thing about sports with no ball.
Right. 773 says, why don't you tell the guy to create something that has them playing with imaginary friends and talking to themselves at night? Try again, dude. It's friendly advice. Do something we want. Ask us what we want. Mm-hmm. Then take it and make and build your own idea.
Well, that's not what inventors do. I don't know if you've heard of a famous inventor called Steve Jobs, but he didn't say, hey, America, what do you want? And America didn't say, we want the iPhone, right?
Right.
He came to them and said, look, I made the iPhone.
Right.
And then they wanted it. So they made new versions.
847 says, this is not a sports camp. It's an acting camp. Kids do not need a feeling of false confidence. They need to learn that everyone has a special set of skills. And what they're not good at, say sports, they will excel in something else like music, math, writing, etc. It's more important to give them the opportunity to try a variety of things.
Well, I disagree. This is definitely a sports camp. We play all of the sports. We play baseball, tennis, basketball, football, lacrosse, or really even imaginary sports. Because, and I should say, we don't differentiate between the sports. We don't say, now it's time for basketball, now it's time for tennis, now it's time for football. We put all the kids out in a large grassy field, and what sport they're playing is really up to them at any given time. So some kids might be pantomiming their way through a tennis match while others may be playing basketball and, you know, a lot of internal dialogue really defining what's going on. It's something to see, I'll tell you. We've tested it. We've got 20 or 30 kids out there in a field. They're all just running around like crazy, and you can almost hear the crowd cheering.
773 says, nay, because the idea is all right, but the idea of winning all the time sounds pretty boring and tiring because some people actually enjoy losing. You can't always win in life.
Well, I don't think anybody enjoys losing. And I tell you, again, we do teach the lessons of, you know, how to be a graceful loser, because half of every day is spent reading textbooks about losing, about sportsmanship.
Right.
It's a very academic curriculum. It's not just pantomiming sports.
847 says, you cannot visualize or pantomime yourself to success.
Well, but in sports you can. The new sports can. So
let's,
I think they actually just misunderstood.
Yeah, maybe they misunderstood. Yeah. Let's go to George. George, yeah. Yay or nay on the new sports camp?
Yeah, just I have a few quick, fast points to make. You can't read a textbook and convey the feeling of loss. Mm-hmm. It's just as simple as that. You can't read something.
Yes, you can.
Now I know what it feels. No, you can't.
Have you ever read Time Traveler's Wife?
Steve Jobs. You know what Steve Jobs then did was he created something tangible. He didn't just say, let's pretend like we're playing on a new phone that you can touch the screen. You know what I'm saying?
Some of the apps are like that, though.
What are you talking? The apps are completely third party. The apps are not.
Yeah, but you have to, you know, there's some suspension disbelief with a lot of those
games.
No,
you're putting yourself in a smaller
and smaller box. You're not really a troll.
You started at Apple, then you went to the iPhone, now you're at the apps. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you can't, the idea just
is not. Have you ever read Time Traveler's Wife?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, don't tell me you can't convey loss in a textbook, because I wept.
Well, you know what? That's not, okay. You're talking about kids. You're an adult. You've gone through things in your life that makes you relate to that book. These kids are in first grade. How are they going to relate to losing a game when they're playing with an imaginary ball?
Well, because they still have gym class at school.
Now you're relying on gym class at school to kind of combat your idea so that they can compare between. It's not a good idea. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks, George. Thanks for that.
You say that I'm wrong, so that's why you think it's not a good idea. But you're arguing incorrectly. You have to listen to some of my points.
Well, all right, let's go to Steve. Steve's on with Steve. Yay or nay on the new sports camp, Steve?
I go with nay because to me it's just digital reckless abandon.
There you go.
How is it digital?
Well, it's just you want to develop it like an app.
No. I'll say it is Bluetooth compatible.
Thanks, Steve.
The camp is Bluetooth compatible, but this is an actual physical sports camp. There's no app involved. I think he got confused by the conversation I had with that other caller.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Let's go to Derek. Derek, you are on Frying Pan. Yay or nay to the new sports camp?
I'll only give this a yay if master gardening as part of the sports camp.
Thank you, Derek, for that. Well, it's a callback to last week when the master gardeners came after Steve for his idea.
I mean, again, since it's imaginary pantomime, sure, there's master gardeners. You know, there's it can be master anythings, really.
847 says
wizards and warlocks too. But, yeah. You know.
Kids need to actually experience life. They need to learn how their actions lead to success. They need to learn how to struggle.
And that's what the academic half of the course is. That's why we have the textbook to accompany the pantomime sports.
Okay, let's go to Tim. Tim, yay or nay to the new sports camp?
Definitely nay. For two reasons. The person who called earlier is right. You cannot teach philosophy reading about it. I don't care about the time traveler's life. The real thing, though, is that you're not teaching these kids what it feels like to hold a golf club or to hold a baseball or to hold a baseball bat or to throw a football field, to actually hold the football and know what it feels like, to know what it feels like to actually swing something in your arms, to actually hit something with that bat and know when it's a good shot or when it's a good hit or when it's a perfect spiral.
Mm-hmm. Okay, don't you think feelings are overrated?
Well, I don't know if they're overrated, but he makes a good point there. Let's try one more call. Kyle. Kyle, the new sports camp, yay or nay?
I'm going to say nay. I guess the confidence that these kids might gain in camp, you know, what happens when they go back to school and they're faced with maybe their friends or other students that actually play the sports. And look at them and say, hey, you're that kid that went to that, you know, pretend camp. You know, you can't actually play the sport.
Well,
so
it's not a pretend camp. We have
Kyle.
A facility. You know, I think these kids are going to thrive because you put them in a gym class compared to kids who've been to normal traditional sports camp. These kids will have had the imaginary experience of winning some pretty intense games. They'll have gone up against zone defense, man-to-man defense, some real intense imaginary defense scenarios, you know. And really, the sky is the limit with the type of things they will have experienced through pantomime and acting on our sports field. So I think they're going to be far more equipped. Mm-hmm. I think those other kids are going to come into gym class, and these kids, because of the confidence they have, are going to try to execute some pretty fantastic sporting maneuvers in all the different sports.
Steve Gadlin's my guest tonight. He's here every Friday at the Frying Pan. Tonight's idea, the new sports camp. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll read some of the more colorful responses.
Okay, I'm thinking you're saving all the yays for the end tonight.
Yeah, yes.
It goes a skewed set of calls.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff here. Can't wait to read it to you. Coming up here after the break.
Great.
Stay with us. Wanna get rocked. All right. The Def Leppard says it's time for the end of the Frying Pan. Steve Gadlin joined us on the line. Steve, of course, from IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. Tonight's idea, the new sports camp, essentially a camp that pantomimes.
With no balls.
There's no balls.
Sports camp, no balls.
Susan's on the line. Susan, yay or nay to the new sports camp?
Nay. First of all, I'm an occupational therapist. And from a neuropsychological, a neurological basis, the children actually need to feel they need to learn those real skills, feeling the ball in their hand, learning how to step back and toss the ball. They need to learn those skills. Not everything is, real life is not lived on the internet. And particularly when you're a child. Pardon?
This isn't an internet thing.
Well, yes, but I'm just saying that the fact that they have no real ball in their hands, it's outrageous. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. You need to actually, even if you lose, you have to learn how to do those neurological, you have to really learn the physical skills from a neurological standpoint as a child, and that is extraordinarily important.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you for that.
I mean,
sorry to cut
you off. When are you ever going to use those skills again? You know, I mean, people always complain, oh, when are we going to do this math stuff in the real world? Well, you actually are. But when are you ever going to need to throw a perfect spiral with a real football? Well, hey, unless you're Walter Payton, odds are unlikely. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get to some. All right, let's get to some of the more colorful stuff. 630 says this will prepare them. Okay, this will prepare them for the many imaginary lovers in their lives. It's pretty good.
Imaginary what?
Lovers.
That's a hit. And, you know, these kids who need help with sports get enough of that from the bullies at school. So let's lay off of these kids. Right?
8-4 Sue from Glenview says, a textbook about losers? So wait, Steve wrote a book? That's pretty good.
Well, no, we commissioned the book.
Oh, okay.
From, people.
But I think
writers.
I think it was pretty good. This 630, this man has the brain capacity of a half of a stale Tic Tac.
Okay. Well,
773. Yeah.
Because Tic Tacs don't have brains. They're non-organic.
773 says, my brain hurts. 312 says, Quidditch, anyone? That's the idea of a.
Well, hey, if they want to play that at our camp, they can.
Okay.
And that's the thing. Try playing that in a real gym class. There's no such thing as a flying broom. But in the, garden of your mind, it's coming up. Flying brooms.
262 says, I think Steve should combine forces with his idea and Jenny Craig weight loss. That way you could have an 8-course meal every night and still lose weight.
Okay.
312 says, I love the Tom Cruise analogy. He's absolutely right. Look at the Three Amigos in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's a very good point. The Three Amigos were actors, but then they were able to win a whole war.
Right. Yeah, right. I think that they're okay. All right, I'm going. Why doesn't this is a good one? This is a good one. Nay, 773. Why doesn't he pantomime and pretend he's a winner with his dumb ideas? Then he can display his phantom trophy and improve his own self-esteem.
Well, I'll tell you, and they're making a joke, but that's how you do it. It's fake it till you make it. It is my motto.
Right.
So
815 says, holy crap, would you stop talking to this moron?
Wow.
Yeah, that one's just
pretty
straight
up.
Can you
say crap? Can you lie to me?
Yeah. I can see it now, 312. One of the better sports pantomime tells everyone at work how he pitched a no-hitter. He even has a trophy to prove it. He puts it alongside his fake Salesman of the Year trophy. This guy's an idiot.
Well, I was with them until the "this guy's an idiot" part, because they were describing a scenario that's actually right out of our brochure. So
815 is a different take on it. They say your guest is an idiot.
Okay.
Instead of this guy, tell him to live in the real world.
Okay.
The whole sports camp should pantomime. We got that. The Marcel Marceau idea is dumb. Did you get dropped on your head as a child?
Nope.
574 says, what a nerd.
Well, hey, now, come on. It takes one to know one.
Yeah.
Area code, whatever area code that was.
847 says, no balls. Who better than Steve to think of it?
I don't get it. I'm laughing, but I don't get it. I really don't understand.
815 says, no offense, but it sounds like this guy's never won anything legit in his life.
Well, I did win Shark Tank, so,
There you go.
I've got that going for me.
You do. I think that's it. Okay, 773 says, you want positive, Justin? I'll give you positive. I'm positive that this guy thought of this idea on the L on the way to the show.
Well, I don't take the L, and I'm calling in tonight. So
right.
I'm positive that that caller is wrong.
And there you go. Here's the last one. 815 says, here is your pay for this idea. You can imagine it's millions, so you can feel good about yourself.
Well, that's very funny, but again, sports and business are two totally different games.
Right.
No pun intended.
Well, there you go. I have to say, not since the days of maybe mail or some of the earlier ones did we have such a resounding no.
Remember that gun that said, are you sure, before I let you shoot it?
Right,
one got a lot of no's.
So maybe not the greatest idea, but Steve, thanks for playing once again and coming up with an idea. Yeah. The new sports camp probably has to go back to the drawing board. But you know what? Hey, that's life. And we thank you for bringing your idea to the show tonight. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thanks, you too. Take care.
Let's going to be gorgeous at the Cell tomorrow, Justin. Why don't you break your rules, buy some tickets, and go support your team? They had plenty of guys down there, Matt. They had plenty of guys.
They could always use more.
No, I'm not supporting. I'm sticking to my rule.
You're not supporting your second team in the major leagues to reach 20 wins.
Justin, this carries over from last night. Just tell them to get on with it.
Why should I go to the game?
Just tell them to get on with it. This carries over from last night.
Why should I attend the games just because they're winning? That doesn't make any sense.
God, Cubs fans are exhausting.
You just wait.
Penny,
you just wait, my chair! It's going to get a lot worse.
Panionovich, he said that, you know, that the White Sox, there's something, there's that working class ethic and this kind of idea that blue collar workers.
They're workers that go home, have a six pack, and watch a game on TV.
They're not paying $500 for their family of four to go to a game. And it's true. You only get to go once or twice a year because of what the cost is.
Yeah, we don't all get to live on the North Shore and wear our hemp necklaces and just hang out in the summer like Cubs fans do. Sox fans actually have to work and do something with their lives.
Well, you screwed up somewhere along the way then, didn't you?
No, but I think that, you know, if you look at SportsCenter or Baseball Tonight, I mean, you'll see every squad when there's a home run, they're like, there's a big hit, you know, like there's, oh, Clayton Kershaw with the strikeout. There's nobody in any of those parks. Like in April and May, they're just not selling out. Wrigley Field is special.
Maybe they're not. But
Yankee Stadium.
The Cubs are only drawing the fifth best in all of baseball. The Sox are the third worst. So there's a huge discrepancy.
But
there.
We saw the Cubs play the Pirates and it was like empty. Half of it was empty. That the huge series that just happened Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one night too. I'm like, right. What the hell? But the Penguins had a huge game that night. Yeah, well. So
watch,
that might have
watch a
things.
Marlins game.
a Rays game.
Right.
That is the worst stadium.
I mean,
in the
even
world.
The World Series champ, the Kansas City Royals, you watch there and you're like, nobody's out in that outfield. I mean, it's the time of the year that people are like, I'm saving my
tough.
Money.
There's
and
no doubt about that.
We just
that.
Said, like, I would say if the Sox are still in first place come July.
Last night it was September. You brought it up a month.
No, I'll
so
say
good.
I'll say Two July.
Months.
I'll say July. I'll say.
Last night you were like, if by September, when there's like four games left, then I'll buy in. Maybe
I'll buy in the second. I think I get to the second round. All right.
show me the World Series, then I'll think about it. Game seven, maybe. Maybe.
I'm only an
How
October
much?
Baseball
How
guy.
What you want?
And the tickets have to be free.
We're going to celebrate Mother's Day tonight by talking to a ton of very strong and great women. Of course, it's Patty Vasquez's show, so that's what we should be doing. Heidi Stevens from the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, I love Heidi.
She's my favorite columnist, and she wrote a very powerful piece for Mother's Day talking about what she wants for Mother's Day, and it's not flowers. Sarah Martin Lorenzi runs CALE, the Chicago Area Alternative Education League. They provide athletic and artistic opportunities for kids in those alternative schools that they would not get. They've got a big fundraiser coming up. We've got a couple of doctors on later, Dr. Natalie Marks and Dr. Patricia De La Mora, a pediatrician and a veterinarian who are teaming up to raise awareness on ticks and Lyme disease this time of year.
Okay, that's a big deal.
And then Sarah Goner, no, what I said, I'm saying her name wrong. Sarah, our friend from the show from months ago, her and her girlfriend they refurbished an old, you know those old Airstreams, the silver bullet looking things that you haul around on the back of your truck?
Yeah.
They refurbished one, and now they're just traveling the country because they can both work out of the house. So as long as they can get Wi-Fi,
they're
set. They can do that because the one's like a graphic designer.
How big is that?
It's a pretty good size one. I mean, it's like a home. It's like a motor home, but your motor's separated.
I did a story on this one time that you're not allowed to park those on side streets in Chicago.
That would
make
sense.
There's a rule. There's a rule that's like it's a hidden. It's a you know, no one ever talks about it. But like if you have a camper or an RV or possibly, you know, what they've got refurbished,
something like that. Yeah.
They'll ticket you like if you even double.
But you're taking up what, four spots?
Yeah,
I believe it.
So cops are paying attention to that stuff.
Usually people park them in like Walmart parking lots, things like that. I imagine.
Yeah, right.
And if you're coming into the city, you can probably detach it in a parking lot somewhere and then just drive the car in. So.
Look at this. We gave you loopholes.
Yeah.
If you
don't pay that ticket.
Matt, have a great weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
Great
you
show,
too.
Man.
It was good seeing you.